I'd like to call this meeting of the Elections Committee to order. Good morning, everybody. A quorum is present. Just as the first thing to mention, the first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes for the March 6th, 2024 meeting. May I have a motion to approve the minutes? Representative Frederick has moved approval of the minutes. Any discussion? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye. Aye. Opposed? The minutes are adopted. The first item on the first bill on the agenda is House File 3276, dealing with ranked choice voting. I will move that House File 3276 be re-referred to the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee. Just so members are aware, we did have a full hearing. I think we spent an hour and a half on a ranked choice voting bill last year, but we are, hopefully we don't need to rehash things that we discussed last year, but we are giving this one a hearing as well. So, and then just so members are aware also, there is an A4 amendment in your packet. It did not meet deadline, so we are not going to be adopting it, but it's likely that it will go on largely in this form in the State Government Finance Committee, so I just wanted to make sure that members were aware of it, and we will be discussing it as well. So that's the status of that. Any?
So we will be discussing the A4, is that what you said?
Yes, I mean, to the extent we... To the extent anyone has questions about it or anything, I think it's appropriate to discuss it here.
I think that's appropriate, Mr. Chair, since it mm-hmm. sounds like it's going to be added to the bill. And this is the Elections Committee and the committee most directly affected by this bill. You know, in the future, if there's a deadline problem, we could consult and work our way around that if necessary. And
okay.
I'd be happy to cooperate.
Sure. I apologize for not bringing this to your attention. So I have moved House File 3276 to be re-referred to the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee. Representative Frazier, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair, Vice Chair, and Lee Torkelson. Thank you again for allowing me the opportunity to speak to this bill. It is different from last year. Last year was a lot broader. We heard from folks, we've connected with folks, we've engaged stakeholders, and we come back with a bill that would only provide for a local option if jurisdictions wanted it. Minnesota is known for being a leader in civic engagement and democracy, but we believe that our communities can do it even better. We have the opportunity to make our local elected leaders more reflective and inclusive of communities they serve and address some of the toxicity and divisiveness harming our democracy. That's why we need this bill and the outcome it can offer. Ranked choice voting empowers voters to rank candidates in order of preference and ensures winners with a majority or the highest support possible in a single decisive and cost-effective election. This is especially important for communities of color who historically have been marginalized and underrepresented in our political system. In traditional elections, candidates often cater to a narrow base of supporters to secure a plurality of votes, leaving communities of color feeling ignored and disempowered. With ranked choice voting, candidates have to appeal to a wider range of voters, including those from communities of color, to win. It also incentivizes candidates to build broad coalitions of voter support that span differences in background and political ideology. Ranked choice voting also allows for more diverse candidates to run for office without splitting a vote among them and therefore have a chance at winning. This opens up the field to a wider range of candidates to represent a broader set of values and interests of communities of color. Ranked choice voting has been shown to increase opportunities for women and communities of color, which is demonstrated by the historic all-female and diverse city councils in St. Paul and Minnetonka following elections of last November. Ranked choice voting has proven to be easy to use and foster higher voter turnout. In Minnesota cities that have adopted ranked choice voting, Minneapolis, St. Paul, St. Louis Park, Bloomington, and Minnetonka, the overwhelming majority of voters have consistently said ranked choice voting is simple and voter turnout has increased since adopting ranked choice voting. Communities of color in particular have historically had lower voter turnout rates, so any method that can increase turnout and engagement is a positive step towards greater inclusivity. In ranked choice elections, candidates must appeal to their opponents' supporters for second and third choice votes, and they do that by running positive campaigns that focus on policy solutions rather than personal attacks. That's exactly the antidote we need to heal our political divisions and promote more civil, representative, and inclusive elections. This bill is necessary because under current law, only charter cities with odd year elections less than 1%, which are less than 1% of Minnesota local jurisdictions, have the ability to adopt ranked choice voting today without this legislation. The Local Voices, Local Choices Act gives power to all cities, counties, and school districts to decide if ranked choice voting is best for their communities. The bill promotes local control and has no mandates, allows jurisdictions to adopt ranked choice voting by ordinance, resolutions, referendum, or amending their charter if they want to, allows for the creation of standards for implementing ranked choice voting in both single and multi-seat nonpartisan elections. It gives the Secretary of State rulemaking authority to establish additional standards necessary for jurisdictions to implement ranked choice voting in even years and across multiple jurisdictions. It provides for state certification of ranked choice voting equipment and tabulation systems, allowing for faster election results. This bill is about local control, empowering Minnesota communities to make decisions about how best to run their local elections. My office has been working with the Secretary of State's office to ensure the technical language of the bill works, and I'm grateful for their efforts and support. Chair, if I can't speak to the A4 Amendment, I know I'm not going to move it.
Sure.
So the A4 Amendment, reflects that work. I do apologize for the timeliness of it, but that amendment is important and crucial because it lines us up with the Senate version of this bill, as well as provides language that is acceptable by the Association of Minnesota Counties, and the League of Minnesota Cities. With that, Chair, I will yield to testimony.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. The first testifier on the list is Secretary of State Steve Simon. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Secretary, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Steve Simon, Minnesota Secretary of State. I want to thank you for your time and attention. I want to thank Representative Frazier for his leadership on this. This is really about unshackling cities. Right now, as you heard Representative Frazier say, we have two classes of cities. We have statutory cities and we have charter cities. But strangely, right now, only charter cities are even allowed to experiment with ranked choice voters. No other cities are allowed to even experiment with ranked choice voting. And you don't have to like ranked choice voting. You don't have to buy into the concept at all, or maybe you're not sold yet, to understand that other cities should have the opportunity to experiment with it. If they don't like it, they can ditch it. If they like it, they can keep it. But it really is that simple. Right now, if a statutory city wants to experiment with ranked choice voting, that city, that jurisdiction would have to come to you, would have to come to the legislature with a one-off bill and, in essence, you know, plead their case and plead for an exception to the law. It doesn't make sense. I used to carry a version of this bill myself when I was among you in the Minnesota House of Representatives, and I think for a long time it has made a lot of sense. Give cities the option. Give them the choice. Give them the freedom. Give them the flexibility to choose the election system that works for them, only for nonpartisan elections, only for municipal elections. But it doesn't make sense any longer to have communities in two separate categories, in two separate classes. So this would give more freedom, more flexibility to all jurisdictions across Minnesota to adopt ranked choice voting if they wish. That's the bill, and that's the reason, the best reason, I believe, to support it. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We have, I think, five people who have signed up to testify on this bill. We've asked them to keep their remarks to 2 minutes. So if it gets to be past 2 minutes, you may hear me ask them to wrap things up. So the first testifier on the list is Jen Westmoreland. Welcome, Board Member Westmoreland. And after Jen Westmoreland will be Christina Scipione. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm Jen Westmoreland. I've served as a member of the Hopkins School Board for the past 7 years. In 2020, I introduced a resolution supporting the local option for jurisdictions to choose ranked choice voting, such as cities and school boards. Our school board unanimously passed this resolution in 2020. Since then, I've witnessed firsthand the benefits of ranked choice voting in the city of Minnetonka, which is part of the Hopkins School District and a community that I've called home for many years. These benefits included more diverse candidate pools, higher voter turnout, and less costly election cycles. When there was an effort to repeal ranked choice voting last November, Minnetonka voters resoundingly said yes to ranked choice voting a second time at the polls. Ranked choice voting would also be a great benefit to county races, eliminating costly and low turnout primaries. I'm currently a candidate in the Hennepin County Commissioner District 6 special election, where the primary and general election are only 2 weeks apart. Ranked choice voting would make voting in this election more accessible for our community and less costly for the county. As I'm sure you know, ranked choice voting is part of the Hennepin County government's legislative agenda for this year. For these reasons and more, I ask you to support this bill, and I thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Christina Scipione, and after Christina Scipione will be Anita Smithson. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Christina Scipione. I am the city clerk in Bloomington, and I thank you for your time today. I have been administering elections since 2008 and was responsible for implementing ranked choice voting once it was approved by Bloomington voters in 2020. I am speaking in support of two provisions in this bill. First, I am in support of statewide standards for ranked choice voting. Consistency is important in elections. Ranked choice voting voters in Golden Valley should have the same experience as voters in Redwood Falls and Bloomington. Statewide standards make it easier for all to understand how RCV elections are administered, which increases transparency and trust in the electoral system. Statewide standards also lower the barrier to entry for communities that want to implement RCV but feel overwhelmed by the daunting task of creating an electoral system from scratch. The second provision I am in support of is allowing the use of federally tested RCV tabulation software. Bloomington has used RCV in two local elections. We've used both tabulation methods currently available, the spreadsheet method and the hand count method. Both methods are manual processes which delay results reporting. Delayed results reporting provides room for misinformation to spread and can diminish trust in the electoral process. Software does exist that automates the RCV tabulation process, but current law does not provide for its use. Allowing the use of RCV tabulation software will minimize the time needed to hold tabulation rounds, which will provide the quick results reporting that our voters have come to expect. Thank you for your time today. As an election administrator, I appreciate your consideration of those provisions.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Anita Smithson, and after Anita Smithson will be Rod Adams. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you. Hi, Chair and members. My name is Anita Smithson. I'm a political strategist and campaign manager in Bloomington, and I'm here today because I have supported and managed several local campaigns, and I want to share the positive outcomes in our Bloomington community with ranked choice voting elections. Voting is a fundamental right, and it should be easy. Ranked choice voting is easy. Even the candidates in Bloomington who were vocally opposed to ranked choice voting clearly articulated which races they wanted their supporters to rank just one candidate and which races they wanted their supporters to rank multiple candidates. Reviewing election results makes it apparent that voters from all demographics across the city were able to find candidates to rank. Fairly clear coalitions of voters emerged in patterns that aligned with the conversations we were having and hearing from our opponents on the campaign trail. After thousands of conversations with voters, it was clear that the overwhelming majority understood how to cast their ranked choice voting ballot. I also appreciate that ranked choice voting incentivizes candidates talking to more voters. Several of the campaigns I have worked on in Bloomington had multiple candidates for each seat. In 2021, we knew for one of our races that the vote would be split four ways, and that while voters and candidates may not agree on every issue, we knew there was room, especially in our nonpartisan local elections, for finding common ground and shared values. It is because we reached beyond the most dedicated base of supporters we heard from more voters, even ones who disagreed with our campaign on some issues, and found areas of commonality that we would not have found if we were just sticking to our base. With RCV, we had an incentive to talk to more voters because it was the right thing to do, but also because it was a key winning strategy. RCV elections are won by the people with the broadest community support, and local voters know the issues impacting them best. We all benefit when more voices are heard in the electoral process, and ranked choice voting is a valuable election reform to support more community voices. Please support this local control bill to give other communities the same opportunity we have in Bloomington to use RCV to improve their local democracy.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Rod Adams, and after Rod Adams will be Mary Hartnett. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Rod Adams. I'm the founder and executive director of the New Justice Project Minnesota, and I'm here to speak in support of HF 3276. So our electoral system was designed to shut people out. And it was only with time, hard work, that more and more people gain access to the ballot and the voice who represents them. And there is no denying that there's been progress, but just achieving access to the ballot isn't enough. Too often, Black communities and communities of color are asked to choose from candidates that don't represent us or our interests. Ranked choice voting helps communities who have been traditionally marginalized by allowing more people who look like us to run, which in turn gives our communities more choices and chances for direct representation. The positive impact of ranked choice voting on representation in elections has been demonstrated over and over again. Before RCV, Minneapolis and St. Paul had nearly all white councils, city councils. Since RCV, they've had the most diverse councils in their histories. This is because RCV gets rid of the unrepresentative low turnout primaries, which has been a huge structural barrier for candidates of color. Under RCV, a multiracial electorate turns up in a single higher turnout general election, giving diverse candidates a much greater shot at winning. And rather than split the votes among candidates of color, RCV allows voters of color to pool their votes and increase the opportunity for their candidates to win. In all the cities that use RCV, we've seen a lot of firsts. The first Somali, the first Hmong, the first trans, the first Latino, first all-female city councils right here in St. Paul, in Minnetonka, and more. In 2023 alone, more than half of winners were people of color, and more than 90% of them were women. As someone who's worked on multiple campaigns and elections over the years, I see these huge strides building representation and political power as the way to achieve a truly multiracial democracy. Let's give more communities the power to shape how they choose their representatives and vote yes on local voices and local choices. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next testifier is Mary Hartnett. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Freiberg, members of the committee, my name is Mary Hartnett, and I'm the executive director of Clean Elections Minnesota, a nonpartisan nonprofit that advocates and educates for a strong democracy in Minnesota. We are here to support House File 3276, the Ranked Choice Voting Local Options Bill. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to testify today, and thanks to Representative Fraser for authoring the bill. Only 15% of our Minnesota cities are presently authorized to adopt RCV for their local elections. That means 85% are prohibited from conducting their elections the way that they think best. Cities and counties are asking for this change. Over 14 cities and counties have passed resolutions supporting RCV for local elections in Minnesota. We need to listen to them. Local control just makes sense. RCV offers a way to bridge divides. 3 years ago, I ran a city council campaign, a very scrappy ward, that had seven great multiracial candidates running for the same seat. They ranged from 23 years old to 72 years old. The candidate forums were full. To court voters, each candidate had to show what they had in common with other candidates to become voters' second and third choices on their ballot. What could have been divisive and combative became a healthy competition. It promoted more direct outreach to diverse voters and a more thorough vetting of issues that were important to our community. At present, only five Minnesota cities have the benefit of RCV. Let's strengthen our democracy. Let the people decide. Please vote to adopt House File 3276. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Do any members of the public wish to testify on this bill? Okay, well, if you could come forward. And please keep your testimony to 2 minutes or less. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Michael Holt. I live in St. Paul. We've been using ranked choice voting for some time. Some years ago, there was a election for mayor. The seat was open. There were 10 candidates, and I looked through all their materials, their biographies, their position papers, and I decided that there were four of them that were reasonably aligned with my values and I thought had a reasonable chance of being a successful mayor. I voted for all four of them. I had to rank my vote. Melvin Carter won that election, and he had not been my first choice, but I had voted for him. So consider the effect after the election. Everyone else has been talking about the election itself. The election has happened, and I hear the news that Melvin Carter got elected. My immediate response was, hey, Melvin, he'll be good. I voted for him. Had I only been allowed to vote for one candidate, I could have had a very different reaction to the news of Melvin Carter's election. Melvin Carter, the ranked choice voting, made me a more engaged voter. I feel a connection with the government more than if we had not had ranked choice voting. We live in a time where people feel alienated from their government, and this is a way to address that. It increases citizen engagement and buy-in, and I think that is the single best reason to have ranked choice voting. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I only saw the one hand, so I will turn now to amendments. Representative Torkelson, did you want to offer either the A6 or A7 amendments? We could do some member discussion if you prefer for a bit, too. Okay, Representative Torkelson has offered the A6 amendment. Representative Torkelson, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This would require jurisdictions must adopt ranked choice voting no later than 180 days before the first day of filing.
You probably want to put your microphone a little closer.
Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment would require jurisdictions must adopt ranked choice voting no later than 180 days before the first day of filing affidavits or candidacy to have the time they need to succeed in preparing for the election.
Thank you for the amendment. Lead Torkelson. Representative Frazier, did you have any comments to the amendment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Lead Torkelson. We did address this in the amendment, and this is in close work with the Office of Secretary of State. We do provide for 20 weeks before the state, before the primary, for that declaration piece. So I will ask for a no vote on this amendment, but only because we've been working with the Secretary of State and they've been working closely with local election officials to kind of pin down what's needed to make sure that this can be successful there. So at this time, I'd ask for a no vote, but I am willing to continue to have conversation as we move forward.
Lead Torkelson?
Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw the amendment.
Okay.
If we had been considering the amendment, the A4, this would not have been necessary.
Okay, sure. The amendment has been withdrawn. Thank you, Lead Torkelson. Were you interested in the A7 amendment as well? Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to move the A7 amendment because one of the main criticisms I've heard and seen across the nation on ranked choice is that there are times of where you get to the third or fourth and the total number of votes decreases sufficiently to where the majority of the remaining votes are not a majority of the votes cast. And frankly, for election confidence and integrity, I'd like to maintain that in order to win, you have a majority of the votes cast initially in the election, not the majority of a portion of the votes cast, because other ones have been pushed to the side.
Thank you. Representative Quam has moved the A7 amendment. Representative Frazier, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Quam, for offering the amendment. I will also ask for at this time to not accept this amendment. Again, working closely with the Office of Secretary of State, we have worked out the pieces that are necessary for this to be successful at the local level. And by design, ranked choice voting is designed that the majority of the votes are the votes that will be cast for individuals as they rank them. And even though you have the process of going through the ranking, it still would be the majority of the votes that would go to those individuals.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, there have been ranked choice vote elections where the winner received less than 50% of the total votes cast in that election, because you get to the second and third, plus this would take care of In your opening statement, you said ranked choice voting is to allow minority, participation. And then you bragged about two occasions of where one defined group made up the entire pool of winners. To me, diversity is having people from multiple groups elected. So I wouldn't be bragging about one defined group being all the members that won. And to ensure that we maintain the integrity, we actually want the winner to be the person that receives the majority of the votes cast, not the majority of the remaining votes after you've discarded other votes. So I'm hoping that we will be able to support actual democracy and fair elections.
Any further discussion to the A7 amendment? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The motion does not prevail. So to the bill. Member discussion, Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And excuse me. Thank you, Representative Frazier, for bringing this bill forward. And I also want to thank the several members of my who serve and live in my community who are here with us today. I do bring sort of a unique perspective to this proposal. I am one of only two members of the legislature who's actually, I'm aware of, who has actually run in a ranked choice voting election. And I think there are really a lot of reasons that local governments should want to consider ranked choice voting, particularly given that local elections tend to have vastly lower turnout, and local elections either tend to be nonpartisan, where the coalitions are much more fluid, or they tend to be in localities that are so heavily partisan that they are, in effect, nonpartisan. And there are, I think, really just a lot of good reasons for local elections to be able to consider this. But even more so than that, the more unique perspective that I bring to this is that I am pretty sure I am the only member of the legislature who has actually had to implement ranked choice voting on the local level. I was on the Bloomington City Council when we implemented it. And I would just say to anyone, sort of to echo what the Secretary of State said, regardless of what you think about the policy of ranked choice voting, the fact that local governments will be considering it should make you want to support this bill. That there will be, that this will give locals the ability to consider guidelines and guardrails and all of the things that are involved with implementing ranked choice voting, will, I think, make it a much more transparent process, a much more accessible process for local officials and for residents. We did, I think, as good a job as we could be expected to do in Bloomington when we had to implement it, but it still kind of felt like the Wild West to me. And so I think having all of this in place, it just makes good government at the local level, and I think that's something that we should all support. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't have any members on the list to speak on the bill. Lead Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the author.
Sure.
There is a provision in this bill for recounts. Is there a history of recounts in ranked choice voting elections in Minnesota?
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am not particularly aware of a history of recounts with the ranked choice voting process, but if there's anyone here from Secretary of State's office that, let me see. Okay. Yeah. So you may get the same answer.
Welcome to the committee. As you come down, please state your name for the record and proceed with your response to the question.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg and Lead Torkelson, Nicole Freeman, Office of the Secretary of State. I am not aware of, but I'm happy to ask whether it's internally in our office or talk with the jurisdictions that have ranked choice voting to get you more information on that. I will say that in the A4 amendment, we felt like it was important to clarify that OSS should create rules, particularly for recounts related that are occurring in a ranked choice voting election. As we looked through rules, as they related to, and you know, tried to fit it into a ranked choice voting election, we realized that we think we would need to make some clarifications as to how that process would happen. So that's why we made that modification in the A4.
Lead Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So can you tell me about the process that you have implemented in the A4?
Nicole Freeman.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg and Lee Torkelson. So in the A4, what we have modified is to request that OSS conduct rulemaking for the purposes of the Secretary of State must adopt rules governing recounts conducted under this section. So we don't have a set, you know, standard yet of what we would be prescribing, but that would be in our rulemaking process. So we would, you know, have the public notice period and then be, you know, working closely with our local election officials to create the process that makes sense for that.
Lead Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. We know tabulating ranked choice voting results can be complex and challenging, and I would guess recount would be every bit as complex and challenging, and results would be slow in coming. Another question, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind.
Lead Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the author, you know, in Minneapolis, we know that ranked choice voting has been going on for a while. Their first, if I recall, their first attempt at this, they had a multitude of candidates. I don't remember the exact number. And then as they proceeded to the next election, they ended up raising filing fees significantly. Can you tell us a little bit about filing fees and how they impact a candidate's opportunity to be on the ballot?
Sure. Representative Frazier, I'm not sure it's directly relevant to the bill, but
I don't know if I, Lee Torkelson, thank you for the question. Mr. Chair, thank you for the recognition. I don't know if I can tell you, I would imagine that if there's an exorbitant fee, it could be a barrier to the ballot, but I have not did a query and scanned all jurisdictions to see what those filing fees are, or read any story or read any studies or surveys that say that in the state of Minnesota we have filing fees that are being a particular barrier for candidates.
Lee Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Frazier, it's, from my perspective, it seems like the entire reason for raising those filing fees was to limit the number of candidates on the ballot, because I don't know why, but that's seems apparent to me that that was the reasoning behind it. So you've got kind of this double-edged sword in a way. In this bill, do the who sets the filing fees for these elections?
Representative Frazier.
I believe we still leave that up to the local jurisdictions, but Nicole, I will.
Nicole Freeman, any clarification?
Thank you, Chair Freiberg and Lee Torkelson. Yes, that still would be up to the individual municipality.
Lee Torkelson?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. So there's no limit on how high those filing fees could go if local jurisdiction decided to restrict the number of candidates by raising the filing fees?
Representative Frazier, I don't know if we have that information here. Representative Torkelson, if you were interested in introducing a bill to cap the number, the amount of the filing fee, that sounds like a GOP bill I might be inclined to hear.
That's shocking in itself. No further questions.
Okay, thank you. Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to tell the author that I appreciate statewide standards, because of the confusion that we've seen in some communities with this. I think that helps, plus it also helps in decreasing the amount of time to prep and a little bit more confidence.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sounded more like a comment. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Frazier. And this is just a quick comment, because I know how hard you've worked on this bill, and I think that letting local governments choose the system that works for them is the right choice, and I really appreciate it. And I know you've spent lots of time. We had a lot of time here last year, and so want to appreciate all the work you've done in really listening to local governments, listening to the Secretary of State and members. So just thanks again. That's how policymaking should work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quick, is there evidence that ranked choice voting leads to a higher incidence of ballot spoilage? And what is your criteria for ballot spoilage?
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am not aware of that evidence that it leads to a higher level of ballot spoilage, but I will defer to Secretary of State's office if there's anything to add.
Nicole Freeman.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg, and Representative. I'm not aware of a higher occurrence of spoilage necessarily at the polling, you know, location as somebody is voting. I will say that the you know, there is a process then of, so I'm not sure if you're talking about on election day and that, you know, as people are voting on election day. Yes, I'm not aware of that. And I'm trying to think if that is on a summary statement somewhere. I will look and see if that is something that is reported out of how many ballots were spoiled.
Thank you.
Senator Bliss? Okay. Seeing no additional member discussion, Representative Frazier, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity. Again, members, thank you for the discussion. Again, I am open. If you have any questions, please reach out, and I will be responsive as the bill moves along.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Frazier. With that, I will renew the motion that House File 3276 be re-referred to the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. Motion prevails. The next bill on the agenda is House File 4728, Representative Bonner. If the people leaving could try to do so quietly so we could continue with our hearing, that would be great. Thank you. Representative Bonner, would you like to move that House File 4728 be re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee? Take your time.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move that it be moved to the Judiciary Finance Committee.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Bonner has moved House File 4728 to the Judiciary Committee. Did you want to move the DE2 amendment as well?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move the DE2 and get the bill in the shape I would like it.
Okay. Any discussion to the DE2 amendment? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay, the amendment is adopted. Representative Bonner, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for clarification, the DE2 did some conforming changes with the Senate and also aligned the fees for the limits on receipts and claims. With that, we'll dive right in. Mr. Chair and members, Minnesotans participate in elections at higher rates than any other state year after year. We are proud to consistently claim the top spot for the highest participation in the country. Minnesotans have deep roots in the tradition of participation in the democratic process. We value a long-standing tradition of grassroots support in our politics. Last year, we made historic changes to reduce influence of big money interests and corporations in our political process in favor of small donors placing their money where their values lie. A big part of the tradition is a unique program here in Minnesota called the Political Contribution Refund Program that allows every eligible Minnesota citizen to contribute to a political party unit or political candidate of their choice. We make asserting these values even easier and affordable by allowing individuals to make a fully refundable contribution of up to $75 or $150 per couple under the amounts increased in Minnesota statute last year. The state works in concert with the Campaign Finance Board and the Minnesota Department of Revenue to make these refunds available to all citizens. To date, the program has been widely successful with many Minnesotans across the spectrum participating. To date, this process is highly manual and almost exclusively conducted via paper. With this bill, we seek to modernize the PCR process, bring it online, making it easier and faster, streamlining the process into an electronic format, meeting Minnesotans where they are in the digital age, where convenience and accessibility are not only desired, but expected. The proposal before you utilizes the recently rolled out enhanced CFB reporting system to generate electronic receipts with unique identifiers for each transaction. In this new phase of the digital transformation, the CFB in turn provides political party units or candidates with these unique receipt numbers. Party units or candidates can either furnish the link to the Department of Revenue website and the unique receipt number via paper with a thank you note, or via electronic means to allow the contributor to enter the information directly to the Minnesota Department of Revenue website to process their refund more quickly and efficiently. As an added bonus, the bill enjoys bipartisan support in both chambers, including members of this committee. And with that, Mr. Chair and members, I ask you to support House File 4728 to bring the Minnesota PCR program into the modern era. I do have with me today Mr. Kyle Tan, my first testifier, to testify on its behalf.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Kyle Tan. I'm a resident of Maple Grove in District 37B. Throughout the last decade and a half, I've served as a treasurer, deputy treasurer, or general campaign finance advisor to many political party units and candidates committees regulated by the Minnesota Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. As someone who has issued hundreds of PCR receipts, I am here today to speak in favor of House File 4728, a bill that would modernize the process of receiving and claiming a political contribution refund under Minnesota's PCR program. The electronic process introduced by this bill certainly makes receiving a PCR receipt easier, significantly simplifying the refund claiming process as well. As for whether or not the claim process should be solely electronic, I believe keeping a paper claim form option should not overly burden the Department of Revenue, since it is likely most submissions would use the new electronic system. However, I would respect the Department of Revenue if they disagreed with my opinion on that point. In my opinion, the extra burden from this bill will be carried by the unit treasurers like me. They will be required to enter contribution data more frequently into the campaign finance online software in order for a PCR claim code to be created. In my opinion, this is not a bad thing, as it is never a good idea to leave all of your committee's data entry until it's time to report. As a current party unit treasurer, this new system would allow me to send PCR receipts electronically via email, or be able to combine my thank you letters with information regarding the claiming their refund under the PCR program, which will significantly reduce the amount of paper I issue as a treasurer. To the representatives of the Department of Revenue here today, if there are any, just letting you know, claimmypcr.com is available. And thank you for your consideration of this bill. I'm happy to take any questions if there are any.
Thank you for your testimony. We do have a couple people who've signed up for the bill, too, if you could give them some room up at the table. First is Mary Hartnett, and next will be Tom Wiesen. Welcome to the committee. Even though you were just here, please identify yourself once again for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Hartnett from Clean Elections Minnesota, here to testify in support of House File 4728, the Political Contribution Refund Modernization Act, we're calling it. And I want to thank Representative Bonner for introducing this bipartisan bill and to everyone who signed on. The excessive amount of big and dark money flowing into elections is staggering and threatens our democracy. Public financing programs put more hands into the, more power into the hands of everyday voters. Thanks to Representative Coulter and this committee, the PCR has increased to 75 per individual and 150 per household. But the paper-based program is a deterrent, and voter participation levels in the program are relatively low compared to the number of voters we have. Last year, MnPost asked Campaign Finance Board Director Jeff Segerson why more voters don't take advantage of the PCR. He replied, when I go to Menards and they say, get 11% back if you fill out this form and send it in the mail to this address, I think, well, how many times have I actually done that? An electronic system will make it easier for voters to use. Increased participation and revenue from the PCR will make candidates less dependent on big donors and more accountable and interactive with voters. Increased revenue for campaigns will increase the number of candidates who participate in the program and agree to campaign spending limits. The Department of Revenue received about 45,000 PCR claims in 2022, the time that it takes for individual voters to manually fill out the paperwork. The CFB needs to record the information and the time the Department of Revenue needs to manually process the forms is inefficient and a drag. This is a great bill. We believe that we need to provide more options for public financing programs, but modernizing the PCR is a great first step in encouraging participation in the program, empowering voters, and strengthening our democracy. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Tom Wiesen. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Tom Wiesen. I do have handouts for the committee.
The page can take them and hand them out to members.
Political parties are corrupt organizations created by politicians for politicians. They are the nation's largest, most destructive special interest groups, and as such, they provide no benefit to society, nor do they have any business controlling elections or controlling government. There is no fantasy chain elaborate enough to justify forcing taxpayers to shell out one penny to fund political parties, much less in a more efficient manner that HF 4728 intends to facilitate. I've outlined six major problems with political parties. They're in your first handout. It explains why political parties are unfit and undeserving of any taxpayer funds. I understand the intent of state statute 290.06 subdivision 23 is to mitigate the effects of big money and dark money in politics, and I wholeheartedly support this intent. In the 2019-2020 election cycle, political parties raised over $3 billion to manipulate election outcomes over the will of people. The problem is that political parties are the big money problem in politics, and funding them is in direct conflict with the intent of this law. Political parties use these publicly derived funds to directly manipulate elections where taxpayers cannot vote. In an effort to get big money out of elections, it is not a solution to force taxpayers to fund organizations that use big money to control elections. Wrong is wrong. HF 4728 only serves to make wrong faster and more efficient. Taxpayers should not be forced to fund corrupt organizations that control the outcomes of Minnesota's elections using political party gerrymandered districts. They should not be supporting organizations that use 0.1% of Minnesota voters in the form of extremist political party loyalists to determine the outcomes of primaries at closed political party conventions. They prohibit Minnesota voices in political party-controlled caucuses, and they create unconstitutional laws that prohibit legally eligible Minnesotans from voting. Before you spend your efforts on making corruption more efficient, I would direct your attention to the second handout, which is the red line of state statute 290.06 subdivision 23 that cuts out the corrupt portion of that law. I urge you to vote no on HF 4728 until you revise the state statutes to eliminate mandated public funding of corrupt political parties.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify on this bill? Okay, seeing none, we will turn to member discussion. I have a few who've signed up. Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the author, why eliminate the paper option, I guess? And I'll qualify that. I come from a part of the state where, believe it or not, not everybody has internet access. I don't have internet access. I have a lot of elderly people that when they write the checks out to me, you can barely read it because it's shaking so bad. They don't have access to the internet. They don't have the ability to do that. So that's eliminating a whole bunch of people from the PCR. So I think it's a good idea what you're doing here, but the elimination of the paper one, I really have a problem with. I mean, it would lower the impact on the Minnesota Department of Revenue, but we still need to keep that option.
Representative Bonner.
We should have some folks from the CFB and the Department of Revenue here who can also speak to this particular provision. They want to come forward.
Sure. Is there somebody?
I have Mr. Sigurdsson and I have the Department of Revenue.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joanna Bears. I'm the legislative director for the Minnesota Department of Revenue. Mr. Chair, Representative, that's a really good question. We can do paper or electronic process either way. I know that the folks that have been talking about this kind of wanted to lean to an all-electronic process because there's more verification that goes into an electronic process and folks would get their refunds quicker, but either one works for the department.
Thank you for your response. Representative Bliss?
Oh, I see. Does he want to come down and comment?
Welcome to the committee, Director Sigurdsson. If you could just please identify yourself and respond to the question.
Good morning, committee members. Jeff Sigurdsson, Executive Director of Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. Correct. Of course, the board currently provides the paper booklet receipts to party units and candidates. I believe the understanding in the other body was is that this would provide it more security by having a number that is only provided to the donor and then which is directly provided to the Department of Revenue to streamline their process. But the board doesn't have a position on eliminating the paper receipts.
Representative Bliss?
And what is the status of this bill? Is it going to be held over for future inclusion or?
The bill needs to get heard in, the motion is to refer it to the Judiciary Committee, and I believe it would also need to get heard by the Tax Committee because of the revenue Department of Revenue implications.
So from what I understand, there's no objection from the Minnesota Manager and Budget or the Campaign Finance Board to include both. So would that be something we could maybe amend on in the next committee to include both?
Representative Bonner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, that conversation continues, but we do still have some provision to do such a thing. So I will continue to make that commitment as we move the process along.
Representative Davis?
Mr. Chair, my questions were answered. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Kwan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I signed on to this because adding the electronic receipt in that process seems like an intelligent thing to do. However, with this amendment, I can't see how I can support this bill because it changes it so it says official electronic refund receipts. And I like technology, but we can't toss away the paper, the standard way that we've been doing it for year after year after year, with the snap of a fingers. If we were going to get rid of paper at some time in the future, it would be after all the balls, you got problems when you roll out electronic things at times, generally. And I'd prefer that we actually add and get all the kinks worked out and then discuss, can we get rid of the paper? But to say, oh, we're going to throw away our existing system because, reading this amendment, that's what it says. I can't support that because it's not right.
Thank you, Representative
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bonner.
Just to be clear, the CFB provides those receipt numbers, but you certainly have the option to send those receipt numbers and all of the information to your donors via paper format. It does not say you have to do it electronically. If you are supplying that to your donor, you can still give them the information via piece of paper if you choose to.
Representative Kwan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And reading the plain language of the amendment, it only has official electronic refund receipts. And I use that little book of receipts, somewhat sparingly, but I do use it because there are people. And I don't want to tell a Minnesotan that wishes to participate that it has to be through the electronic. And that's my problem with the current language. I wish that you had had an and or an or, but not deleting. So unless you fix this, I'm off your bill.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Sigurdsson might be able to weigh in a little bit on this.
Director Sigurdsson.
Committee members, I'm just, some of the questions and conversation, I just want to make sure everyone understands the process that the amendment would put in place. The treasurer would have to use CFRO, which is the online reporting application, to generate the number that's used by the Department of Revenue for the refund. So it's not only the issue of getting rid of the paper receipt, it's frankly, moving to issue a receipt number, you have to enter it into the online application. That's the other change that's sort of inherent with this bill, just so that everyone's clear of that point. That was my only issue.
Thank you. Representative Altendorf.
Thank you. My question was answered as well.
Okay. Representative Davis.
Okay, I just want to be clear. So 3.4, it says a refund of a contribution is allowed only if the taxpayer files a claim, that we're on 10 now, claim using the electronic file system authorized in paragraph H. That's the taxpayer claim using the electronic filing system. So this does read that paper's gone, correct? Completely. I just want to clarify.
Would you want to clarify that? I think maybe Ms. Matt Gehring might be good just to clarify the language of the bill.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I'm not sure that I have a whole lot to add beyond the text that Representative Davis just read. I would also note on line 1.20, the change in the DE2 requires the board to provide the electronic refund receipts as rather than the supply of paper receipts.
Just a follow-up question to that point is so, but the board, it says the board has to make it available to the party or the candidate, but as Representative Bonner said, the candidate or party could still then supply a paper record to the contributor. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, so the candidate could provide paper information to the contributor, but then this bill would still require the contributor
correct.
To get the refund to submit it electronically.
Okay. Thank you. And Representative Bonner's indicated that she's willing to continue to work on this. I do think, you know, since this is administered by the Department of Revenue, when this bill reaches the tax committee, I think that would be a logical point to have a further discussion on this point. Representative
sure.
Davis.
Yeah, just one closing comment. Thank you, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chair. Thank you, Representative Bonner. You know, I have a nice older lady. I think she's 83 years old now, and she's still sharp as a whip, and she's still real strong, and really enjoy her, good lady, and she does not have a cell phone. She does not have a computer. She does not have an email. And so I am hoping that we don't discriminate against people out there like her. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill as introduced was very appealing. In fact, many of us have signed on. But I classify myself as a neo-Luddite. I'm of an age where I use electronics, but I don't necessarily always understand how they work. And frankly, if this is not clarified so that we know that those that want to use paper can use paper, and we can get the supplies we need to use paper receipts, I and others will be taking our names off this bill. We were surprised by the DE1. We liked the bill, or the DE, whatever it is, DE. So just really scratching our heads as to why these changes are being made. And it's maybe you intended to keep paper available, but it's really not clear in the language of the DE.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you for that. Just a couple of quick things. I will say, you know, first of all, I have older voters too, and I can tell you that, for example, even in my own family, I have walked I don't know how many folks through how to fill out the paper form, much less filling it out online. And I think there is a little bit of work that we as good stewards of our contributors can do to help them walk through and navigate that process. The one thing I will say that is if they have the ability to do it online, it also allows them to enter their information with a little bit more privacy, perhaps, than having me help them fill out the form where they have to fill out their social security number and all of those kinds of things. So I think there's a little bit of education for those older voters regardless. I will say the piece around the electronic piece actually originated in the Senate, so I will be upfront about that. But I have been actually having some conversations about that with them behind the scenes. So we'll continue to work on the bill, and I suspect you will see a revision in the next stop.
All right, thank you, Representative Bonner. With that, would you like to renew your motion that House File 4728, as amended, be re-referred to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is my motion.
Okay, thank you. All those in favor, please say aye. 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 Opposed?
No.
Okay, motion carries. The bill is on its way. Final bill on the agenda for the morning hearing is House File 4287, Representative Vernig. Would you like to move that House File 4287 be placed on the general register?
I do. I motion that House File 4287 be placed on the general register.
Okay, thank you. Representative Vernig, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. In front of you today is House File 4287, a bill brought forward by members of the Minnesota School Board Association. This bill does two things. One, if a vacancy occurs on the board less than 2 years prior to the expiration of the term, no special election is required, and the appointee of the board shall serve the remainder of the unexpired term. Two, if the vacancy occurs within 90 days prior to the expiration of the term, the board may but is not required to fill the vacancy by board appointment at a regular or special board meeting. School districts do not have dedicated funding to run elections, and therefore they are paid with general fund dollars, dollars that are better served in the classroom. This can be a costly mandate that significantly impacts small school districts. For example, Pine Point had a turnout of 5 people, less than 1% of that district, in a district-run special election. These elections cost on average $10,000, but can be more if the district is larger. It also saves on board administration time if a vacancy occurs within 90 days of the expiration of the term. Not all districts have retired board members willing to come back and fill a vacancy, and with the 30-day waiting period required after the resolution to appoint is approved, a board will go through the process to post, interview, and appoint someone to serve on possibly one meeting before their term expires. This bill would help eliminate some of the costly and labor-intensive current election practices when board vacancies occur. In your packet, you will find a letter of support from the Minnesota School Boards Association, Superintendent Zena Stenvik from Columbia Heights, and Superintendent Dr. Heidi Hahn from Brainerd Public Schools. These letters of support mention the increase in board vacancies in the last few years, the costs associated with special elections, and the administrative challenges when required to appoint so late in a term. I also have with me two testifiers today, Superintendent Greg Winter from Melrose Public Schools and Superintendent Dr. Michael Funk from Stillwater Public Schools.
Okay, thank you. The first testifier is Superintendent Winter. If you could please come forward, just identify yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg and members of the committee. My name is Greg Winter. I am the superintendent of Melrose Area Public Schools. I'm here to testify on behalf of the House Bill 4287. In the 7 years that I've been in Melrose, we've had to twice run a special election. I think everybody in this room is aware of the transition that occurs from time to time in our society. Melrose being about 30 miles northwest of a major regional city of St. Cloud, close to the metropolitan area. From time to time, we do have professional members of our school board that have to relocate because of jobs and duties and other families. These things are expensive. We sit right now in the course of building budgets, hoping we don't have to run another special election to the tune of $7,000 to $10,000. I have been in districts where we have appointed people to fill the terms. It's worked out very well. We've had very little, if any, negative feedback on this situation and process by which we do it. This is just another example of another unfunded mandate that we have to do. We have members of the board that have the level and expertise to appoint a temporary person to fill out that position till the next election. And once again, from my experience, this worked out very well. I would hope the committee would look favorable upon this and see this as another unfunded mandate and another process by which we can move local control back to the school board. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Superintendent Dr. Mike Funk. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Freiberg and committee members. My name is Mike Funk, and I'm the superintendent of Stillwater Area Public Schools. Today, I'm here to testify on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association on House File 4287. This bill helps to solve problems related to how school districts manage a school board member resignation. First, the bill modifies statute so that when a school board member resigns, if the vacancy occurs less than 2 years prior to the expiration of the term, no special election is required, and the appointee of the board shall serve for the remainder of the unexpired term. Today, specifically, I want to talk about the impact of special elections in the Stillwater Area Public School District. In Stillwater, we have had 5 board members resign since 2020. Our district is a large district area-wise, and during that time, over the past 3 or 4 years, we've had to run 2 special elections. In 2021, the district paid Washington County $48,000 to assist with our special election. In 2023, we paid Washington County $88,000 to assist with our special election for us. Because there's no designated funding for schools to run elections, this cost comes from the general fund, taking money out of the classroom and away from students. I also want to talk today about the impact of special elections on districts in another costly manner. In the fall of 2023, we ran a special election. Because of the increased expense of elections, we were asked to run combined precincts by the county in some of our smaller communities due to anticipated lower voter turnout. A clerical error was made on a part of the district in which community members in one of our newly combined precincts were not notified of the change by mail by the specified date. The error was not caught by the county. We were made of this by local citizens after the required notification date and conducted a mailing before the election. The district was forced to go into damage control as this issue was covered by the Pioneer Press and various local media outlets. If we had maintained the process of general elections every 2 years, we would not have the potential for errors related to combined precincts or from not having to run elections which are clearly not our primary area of focus. In Stillwater, the costs related to special elections have been twofold. Our last 2 special elections required the district to spend almost $137,000 that could have been spent on students. The clerical error negatively impacted the reputation of our district, as elections are not our primary purpose. Thank you for your time today and your support of House File 4287.
Thank you for your testimony, Superintendent. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify on this bill? Okay, seeing none, we'll turn to member discussion. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will say I completely understand why the administration loves this bill. One of the superintendents named, I won't go into that, I am very familiar with, and I completely understand why they love this bill. But the school board serves at the pleasure of the people, not themselves. We're talking about just under 2 years, the school board's going to appoint possibly, potentially, one of its own, and not the people. This takes authority away from the people. And I don't care what kind of price tag you put on that, that's not right. You can make a lot of decisions in just under 2 years on a school board. And that position, that one position on the school board that the people would elect, could be a very strong advocate for a voice of reason that would be shut out with this bill right here. I absolutely cannot support this bill. This takes away local control from we the people That is wrong. I don't stand for it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Davis. Representative Plum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And having been a school board member, having been the treasurer on the school board, in fact, that school board is currently and usually at the bottom for per pupil funding, I'm acutely aware of the financial considerations, but I'm also aware of that school board had three resignations. Two got filled with appointments for the short term before the election for the remaining 2 years. The third one resigned close enough to where they didn't do the appointment. One of the concerns I have is there should be a limit to the number of appointed members on the school board because it dilutes the voice of the people. I understand the reason for trying to not have a bunch of special elections. That's why some years back I was able to get a bill included that limited to just a few occurrences during the year of where you could have it, so it overlapped with township elections and other periods. But the removal of voting, especially if it's multiple positions on a school board, I think hurts the confidence of the public in the school board. And if you, whether it's a referendum or some other issue, lose the confidence of the community in the school board, you aren't going to pass a referendum. So a key part of being on a school board is maintaining the relationship with the community. And I understand am actually for some of the component in this bill, but not when you have multiple members that could or would be appointed. So I think there needs to be additional work done here. Because I don't think it's a recipe for issues and stumbling. We even had a testifier. They weren't competent in, you know, making sure the election was good, and they had additional costs. There's due diligence required, and there's no excuse for lack of due diligence. So I can't support this in its current form, but if there's some additional work so we ensure that it's not going to be multiple people on a board that are going to be sitting there for over a year, then I look back at supporting this. But thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg. Thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill. And, you know, as we heard, I'm also on the Education Finance Committee. And as we heard from the superintendents, both of them both clearly said, you know, such a problem that's happening in our schools right now are these unfunded mandates. And being on the School Finance Committee, you know, we saw schools really suffer this last year that are struggling. 65 new mandates pushed on our schools, the funding that went to them completely erased in their budgets. And so I want to thank the superintendents for testifying today. I also hear you very well, and I hear your frustration. And yet this bill is... I very much disagree with it because this is not an unfunded mandate. This is democracy, which this party likes to claim that they support. And by removing this as an option, by going to an appointment, now we are having basically what we're going to call like an elitist group, and you cannot deny that. It's an elitist group, whether it's the school board, the superintendent. Elitist group is dictating to the people of a district who they find viable for that position to be sitting in that place, which now is possibly a two-year appointment, which that person now becomes the incumbent on the next election cycle. And so although I have so much passion for you, superintendents, I feel the pain that the schools are having, and yet these are two very separate issues. We need to be raising our voice. You know, what happened to our schools was disgraceful, and we cannot continue this complete injustice of the people of Minnesota by erasing their voice so that they do not have a voice of their election systems. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Recently, since COVID, the spotlight has been put on school boards quite a bit, and rightfully so. The school boards seem to be something that people just kind of took for granted, and then when things started happening, they paid more attention, more people got interested, more people ran for these elections, and I think that's a good thing. One of the things that I took note here, our testifiers, and thank you guys for coming down, we appreciate it, that this is local control, and I made a little note of the local control by letting the school board appoint its own members and not the voters. That's not local control. That's rather incestuous. I mean, to refill, if during COVID on some of the local school boards, we had people resign due to the political change, people actually shining a spotlight on the school board. And if we were to allow this to go through, they would just replace with their own candidates. And granted, they posted and interviewed and did it, but it was their own candidates. It wasn't the voters. So I think, and I did take note also on the financial costs that the schools bear on this. And I certainly would be open to having something in the elections committee to help school boards locally with special elections. So I know it's a Republican saying they'd support extra money. That's probably a little bit strange, but I think I would, you know, as long as we help it with the school boards. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Coulter.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick clarification question, I think maybe for Mr. Gehring. The way I read line 2.2 on the bill, it says no special election is required. And I'm not terribly familiar with every sort of bit and piece of this statute, but it, to me, I don't read that as it would preclude a special election. So if the district chose to pursue that option, would they be able to hold a special election?
Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, Representative Coulter, I actually might defer to Representative Vernig to state her intent about that sentence.
Representative Vernig.
Well, I happen to like a lot of tools in a toolbox. So if a school district wants to hold a special election, that's up to them. That's local control. If they don't, they are not required.
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to clarify that. The other thing I would say is that, you know, some of the, what this bill really does, and some of the details are a little bit different, but this really just lines up practice on school boards with current practice on city councils. When there are vacancies in city councils, and I think county boards as well, but I could be wrong about that. But I know for certain when there are vacancies on city councils, there is an appointment process, and there, depending on the timing, there may or may not be a special election. I think this really just adds a level of consistency where local governments operate when vacancies occur. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Coulter. Yeah, I was going to take, since we have a few extra minutes, I was going to take some initiative as chair and just point out that this really isn't anything earth-shattering. I mean, the U.S. Senate has appointments for remainder of terms, and as you pointed out, this kind of lines it up with city councils and other offices that have the authority to make appointments. The bill does have limitations. It only applies when there's less than 2 years on the term. And generally speaking, you know, school boards should, I think, focus their resources on education and not on running elections. So I think it's a... I'm certainly fine supporting this bill, and thought I'd mention that. I'm not seeing any additional member discussion. I'm looking at Lead Torkelson, who seems He doesn't need to say anything on this. Okay. I think it's been debated fully. Any closing remarks, Representative Vernig?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, and Representative Bliss. If you want to work on a bill to help fund this for schools, I'm all in. So let's connect afterwards. You know, I appreciate your consideration for House File 4287. Everyone talks about the historic investment in our public schools last session. Over the decades, they've been asked to do more and more, and this bill offers a little bit of relief. As Superintendent Stenvik said in her letter of support, districts have an obligation to their communities to be fiscally responsible, and this bill makes good sense. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, Representative Vernig renews the motion that House File 4287 be placed on the general register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay, the motion prevails. So we are coming back at 6 p.m. For some more exciting Elections Committee discussion. Any further discussion? With that, we are in recess until 6 p.m. It is 6 o'clock. We will come back to order. This is the Elections Committee, our evening hearing. So a quorum, well, I guess we only recessed, but a quorum would it be present anyway, but we do anyway have a quorum on its own merits. So there is a quorum present. Okay, got it. So the first bill on the agenda is House File 4598. Majority Leader Long, welcome to the Elections Committee. I will move House File 4598 be re-referred to the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee. Would you like me to move the A1 amendment? Please, Representative Chair. Long. Okay, I will move the A1 amendment. Is this just put the bill in the shape you would like?
Yes, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
Is there any discussion to the amendment? Okay. Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, the amendment is adopted. So, Representative Long, to your bill as amended.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. This good government constitutional amendment stands for the basic principle that voters should choose their legislators, but legislators should not choose their voters. As folks know, we've been in split government for the last 50 years when districts have been drawn. In 2020, we had a DFL governor in House and a GOP Senate. In 2010, we had a DFL governor and a GOP legislature. In 2000, a GOP House, Democratic Senate, and Jesse Ventura as governor. By sheer luck, the courts have been drawing our maps for the last 50 years. The first bill I ever passed was to help improve the census to ensure we were maximizing our chances of keeping our congressional seat and maintaining valuable federal investments. Also, when I was first elected at freshman orientation, I approached a number of my new GOP colleagues with one question. We were a split legislature at the time, and it seemed unlikely one party would gain complete control. Why not pass nonpartisan redistricting? Unfortunately, I didn't have any takers at the time. When you're right up against an election, everybody believes that they're going to win. So we missed an opportunity before the last census, but we are far enough out now that it's anybody's guess who will be in charge in 2030. Our court-drawn maps have largely served Minnesotans well, but we take for granted that this is the way it will always be. One need only look to Wisconsin to see the undemocratic impact that gerrymandered maps can have, or if you prefer a democratic gerrymander, look to Illinois. Trust in our government is important. In fact, it's the bedrock of our government. If we erode that trust, the public will rightly grow skeptical of our institutions and our legislative process. Minnesotans vote in the highest rates in the country. We have some of the highest civic participation across many measures. Fairness and public participation are Minnesota values. That's why we should take the important step of amending our Constitution to say that no matter who is in charge, our maps should be fair. This bill learns from best practices and mistakes from other states. It includes many checks and balances to ensure that the process is fair and the commissioners as impartial as possible. The principles are largely consistent with those used by the Minnesota courts to draw our maps and are taken from the work of the House Redistricting Committee in 2021. We've engaged with dozens of stakeholders, both in-state and nationally, to get feedback as we prepared this bill, and I believe this proposal is among the best in the country. But our work is not done. The amendment that I offered today was at the request and in conversation with Common Cause and the League of Women Voters and reflects language that they've worked hard on. I appreciate as well the bill that Chair Cleburne is bringing forward today, as there are many similarities, and I look forward to continuing to engage so that we can work towards one consensus constitutional amendment for the ballot. The second component in the Good Government Amendment would incorporate the current one-year House rule prohibiting lobbying from retired members into the Constitution. Right now, this is unenforceable. As soon as a member leaves their legislative seat, They are no longer subject to the House rules. This is consistent with the one-year lobbying ban that Congress has set for itself, and we would leave the definition of lobbying to be set by the legislature as it could evolve over time with changing practices. We have seen instances in the past of legislators resigning in the middle of session to become lobbyists, often working on bills that they were just negotiating the week before. We know this too undermines trust in our democracy. The third provision in this amendment would increase legislative scheduling flexibility. It would do this by removing the mandatory adjournment date and the cap on the days of meeting per biennium. This is at its core a balance of powers issue with the executive. Given our limitation on calling ourselves into session, we have seen abuses by executives of both parties. Three examples. Unallotment has been used 6 times since 1980 to unilaterally reject legislative appropriations, including 3 times by Governor Plenty. Governor Dayton line item vetoed the legislative pay, holding it hostage to an unrelated policy demand, which prompted a constitutional crisis. And if we want to go more recent in the COVID outbreak, our emergency powers laws was based on a lack of trust that the governor would call us back into session, which resulted in the most special sessions in state history. The legislature is the closest branch to the people, and our voters deserve fair representation in the legislative process. We should be on equal footing with the governor in terms of when we can meet. I appreciate the opportunity for the discussion today, and I know there are several testifiers.
Thank you so for much. Your testimony, Majority Leader Long. So we do have 4 people who've signed up to testify. First on the list is Michael Lee. And after Michael Lee will be Sarah Lopez. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. I am Michael Lee. I am senior counsel at the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University School of Law, where my work focuses on redistricting and elections. My remarks today will be limited to the redistricting portions of House File 4598. Thank you to the committee members for the opportunity today to testify on a piece of legislation that we at the Brennan Center consider that if it were passed would be one of the most significant and strongest redistricting reforms ever enacted by any legislative body. As we said in our remarks, House File 4598 is a robust landmark bill that would transform Minnesota's redistricting process into one of the fairest in the nation, and more importantly, safeguard Minnesotans from the type of abuses that have occurred in recent years in neighboring Wisconsin, and frankly in states up and down the Midwest, both Republican-controlled states and Democratic-controlled states. Although Minnesota so far has been spared the abuses that have been seen in other states, it came close in 2010 to being in the same situation as Wisconsin, with Governor Mark Dayton winning his race for governor by only around 8,700 votes, the narrowest of possible margins. In a highly competitive state like Minnesota, it is not impossible to imagine situations where either party, frankly, could be in control with the legislative trifecta in 2031 when maps are next to be redrawn. This, in short, is not a time to be timid or gun-shy. There are legions of examples of states around the country where legislators and lawmakers had a chance to adopt redistricting reforms but didn't because they were confident about what the politics of the future would look like. And then they were only surprised to find out that their party ended up in the minority and got the short end of the gerrymandering stick. House File 4598 is a strong, well-designed reform in line with best practices from around the nation. After the 2010 redistricting cycle, we at the Brennan Center went around the country and interviewed more than 100 redistricting commissioners and others who had been involved in the redistricting process. And our interviews included not only independent commissions like those used in California and Arizona, but also less independent and more politically connected or politically appointed commissions like those used in New Jersey. What we found in a piece published in 2018 was that design matters, with truly independent commissions performing much better on a whole range of options. And you saw that again this cycle, with a number of non-independent commissions deadlocking, or worse, as in Ohio, passing maps on a party-line basis that not surprisingly turned out to be aggressive gerrymanders. In short, not all commissions are equal. In our written testimony, we outlined in greater detail four features of House File 4598 that in particular we think it, that we believe make it well-structured with provisions that work in tandem to safeguard the redistricting process. And that really is the key. You often have people who try to pick apart a redistricting reform proposal by saying they could see how this provision or that provision might fail. But the question isn't whether a provision might fail by itself. The question is whether there are checks and balances that prevent that failure from being fatal. And we believe in a well-designed proposal like House File 4598 that closely follows national best practices there are. I will close by saying this. It is rare that you see a legislative body seriously consider redistricting reforms that are this good. I've been doing this a long time, and what you normally get from legislatures is something that is a reform in name only. And frankly, when people first approached us about lawmakers in Minnesota wanting to do reforms, frankly, there was cynicism. We weren't sure how far this was going to go. But it's gotten very far, and I want to commend the Minnesota legislature for taking the issue of democracy seriously. House File 4598 is a landmark bill that would continue Minnesota's long and storied tradition of being a leader and a model for states around the nation on how to make sure that voters come first. I urge passage of House File 4598 and would be happy to answer any questions, provide additional information, or be helpful in whatever way we can. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Sarah Lopez, and after Sarah Lopez will be Robert Hyder. And we have asked testifiers to keep their remarks to about 2 minutes. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Sarah Lopez. I'm the Director of Policy at Unidos Minnesota. They're members of the Elections Committee and Chair Freiberg. Unidos Minnesota is an immigrant-led, multiracial statewide organization. We build power for Minnesota working families to advance social, racial, and economic justice across the state and with organizing operations in greater Minnesota and the metro area. I also became a U.S. citizen in 2015, and I'm grateful that I get to participate in our democracy every day. Sorry about that. I'm here to testify in support of the Good Governance Amendment, House File 4598, because Minnesota should be a place where our democracy is reflective of our values. Decision-making is balanced and fair, and people are at the heart of every decision. Everybody should be able to participate in their democracy, regardless of what they look like or where they come from. That is why we support the establishment of an independent redistricting commission to provide more transparency and more public input in the map design process and to prevent gerrymandering. We must place interest first, community interest first, and ensure Minnesota continues its 5-decade-long tradition of nonpartisan redistricting through an independent commission rather than the courts. We also support ending the legislator to lobbyist self-dealing cycle by preventing current and former legislators from being lobbyists for a year after their service ends. Dozens of former legislators are current lobbyists, some resigning in the middle of their term to immediately become highly paid lobbyists. We are also supporting improving legislative flexibility to perform constitutionally mandated duties. This amendment will ensure all policymakers, regardless of income, race, or geography, have the time, resources, and ability to respond to constituent and emerging policy issues. Our grassroots work at Unidos Minnesota consistently points at the need to continue strengthening our democratic institutions and be responsive to all. For new Americans like myself, we share the common value of believing in working alongside you to protect our democracy. Having robust institutions centering people is at the heart of the Good Governance Amendment. We hope you support House File 4598. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Robert Hyder, and after Robert Hyder will be David Fisher. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Freiberg, members of the committee, my name is Robert Heider, and I am the legislative director at Take Action Minnesota. We are a grassroots multiracial people's organization that believes in a democracy and government that works for us all. With our members, we advocate for policies that promote justice and fairness. I am here today to share our strong support for House File 4598. Banning gerrymandering while establishing and empowering an independent redistricting commission will strengthen our democracy by giving Minnesotans maps that represent our geographic, demographic, and partisan makeup of our state. The practice of gerrymandering often allows politicians to choose their voters as opposed to voters having the ability to choose those who represent them. Such a dynamic explains why relatively few districts across the country and here in Minnesota are considered competitive. This naturally results in too many legislative districts becoming sorts of echo chambers, where elected officials are listening to those who share their similar ideologies and demographics, rather than listening to broader bases of voters who hold differing views or opinions. I was born and raised in North Dakota, where a federal judge recently held that their maps violated the Voting Rights Act by diluting the strength of two Native American tribes and ordered that new districts be drawn. On the flip side of that, under this plan, tribal nations and communities of interest would be prioritized in drawing district lines while ensuring that the makeup of the commission will represent the demographic and geographic diversity of Minnesota. At a time when democracy is under attack across the country, opening up the redistricting process to bring in more transparency will put the interests of communities across Minnesota ahead of any political motivations of the politicians who govern them. In a similar vein, ending the legislator to lobbyist self-dealing cycle will strengthen Minnesotans' trust in this institution and the way in which decisions are made. Democracy is more than a simple act of participating in elections. It is a collective practice that includes how legislative districts are drawn and who has influence in our legislature and how that influence is exerted. Our organization's members care deeply about the state of our democracy and actively participate in that collective process. That is why I'm here today to urge this amendment on their behalf, to support this amendment on their behalf, and I urge this committee to support it as well. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is David Fisher. Welcome to the committee. Once you get to the table, please identify yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg and members. I'm David Fisher. I'm a volunteer with Clean Elections Minnesota. We're here in support of an independent redistricting commission and reasonable limits on conflicts of interest and lobbying activity by former legislators. We've not yet taken a position on year-round legislature or on the bundling of constitutional amendments into a single initiative. We do support integrity in our election process and its results, and that every voice should be heard and every vote counted equally. In short, elections should be decided by voters, not by the very politicians competing for the support of those same voters. Today, more than 21 U.S. states are working with nonpartisan or bipartisan redistricting commissions. And although there have been hiccups, the reforms still work better than when maps were drawn by a handful of people in secret behind closed doors. In July 2018, the Brennan Center for Justice released research on commissions, finding, quote, a compelling case that commissions in charge of redistricting can significantly reduce many of the worst abuses associated with redistricting and improve outcomes and satisfaction across stakeholder spectrum, if carefully designed to promote independence and incentivize discussion and compromise. The Brennan Center recommended best practices to meet this end. An independent member selection process coupled with elements of randomness, a commission of 9 to 15 members to assure diversity and avoid deadlock, clear mapping criteria and map approval rules requiring support from across the political spectrum, strong transparency requirements making commission proceedings accessible and accessible, an enforcement guarantee of adequate, enforceable guarantee of adequate funding for operations, and time allowed to hold public hearings, obtain feedback, get necessary adjustments, and draw final maps. The bills before you today, both 4598 and 4593, address these reforms and support those reforms, and they do much more. We do hope that a single bill can come together quickly this session to reflect best practices and the recommendations of impacted and marginalized communities gathered in recent years by the League of Women Voters and Common Cause. Thank you, Chair Freeberg.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify on this bill? Yeah, welcome to the committee. Please come down and state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony. Yeah, okay. Okay, yeah, we'll be glad to have you on the next bill as well. So are there any members who wish to testify on this bill? Okay, seeing none, I'd like to turn to amendments, of which there are several, before member discussion. So the first amendment is the A2 amendment. Representative Davis, did you want to offer the A2 amendment?
I would like to offer the A2 amendment, Mr. Okay. Chair.
Please, to your amendment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll just point out, Representative Long, I think you have more than one amendment here. I know you're proposing one amendment in this bill, but I see three amendments here. And so my amendment, it strikes lines 9 through 20 on page 2, which would strike the language related to legislative days and the end of the legislative session. This language opens the door for us to become a full-time legislature. And the folks that I serve in my district, they want me in my district. I live 2.5 hours away. I know Representative Scraba is like 5 hours away. Representative Burkell is 5 hours away. And we definitely don't want to open up the door in the Constitution to have a full-time legislature. And so I'm offering the A2 amendment. I would highly encourage us not to open this door. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Davis. Majority Leader Long, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd ask members oppose the A2 amendment. We have a tradition in Minnesota of constitutional amendments that include multiple related subjects. The legacy amendment is one where we've done funding for arts and culture in one amendment. These subjects are all good government topics, and so it makes sense to be on the ballot together. We don't have a system of referendum where we have a ton of different questions that we put on the ballot in this state. And so I'd ask members to oppose the amendment.
Representative Quam, to the amendment.
Yes. Frankly, I'm confused what 80% of the states have part-time legislatures. Minnesota is not one of the largest states in the nation, population-wise, or actually geographically. And, I think it is inappropriate and unfair to our citizens to pile multiple things in the same amendment, which makes it tough for them. I like this one, but I wish we didn't have these other two in it. No, let's go ahead and have clean, clear, crisp amendments. Don't muddy things. Don't make things, kind of confusing, which is going to be more important. I want this. I don't want that. No, let's give them the right of choosing the amendment, a pure amendment. And your example of, combining, on that other topic, well, that was actually a very related to each other topic. The sourcing of the funds and the general not to supplant. But this full-time legislature, which I think is pretty controversial because it's not really common in most states, and you've got just about everything, everybody would agree not to have somebody lobbying for a year. I mean, that's a pretty easy thing. And then a convoluted change in redistricting, which is complex enough on its own to where it should be standing on its own. So I just am confused why it's all or nothing, throw it in together. And frankly, we did a lot better when we actually had bipartisan requirement to pass an election bill. And I think it's disingenuous to the people not to listen to a bipartisan input to get the best and most balanced. So vote yes.
Just a clarification, you know, I know one of the testifiers referenced a year-round legislature, and there have been some comments here about that too. The bill does not actually specify that. It just removes the time limit on legislative days. I know the majority leader mentioned examples.
Mr. Chair.
If you'd let me finish about the legislature being able to address issues like unallotment, as well as the repeated special sessions we had during the shutdown. So, Representative Quam?
No, I think we'll get to debating exactly what is in and what is opened up by the different things, but I would say support this amendment.
Okay, thank you. Any additional comments? Okay, so seeing none, any closing remarks?
Representative
Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chair. Representative Long, you didn't even address my amendment. The amendment is to remove the language, page 2, lines 9 through 20, because this is opening the door for a full-time legislature. And just my personal opinion, Mr. Chair, what I've seen here is that's exactly what's going on here and what is wanted. And that is why I will be asking for a roll call, because this amendment addresses this issue. Representative Long would even address it. And we cannot open the door to a full-time legislature, because that is going to hurt greater Minnesota and the districts that we all serve. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right. A roll call has been requested. Clerk will take the roll. Chair votes no.
Vice Chair Greenman.
No.
Minority Torkelson is excused. Representative Abaje is excused. Representative Altendorf.
Aye.
Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Bliss.
Aye.
Representative Coulter.
No.
Representative Davis.
Aye.
Representative Frederick.
No.
Representative Purcell.
No.
Representative Quam.
Aye.
Representative Vernig.
No.
There being 4 ayes and 7 nays, the amendment does not prevail. Representative Altendorf, would you like to move the A3 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I'd like to move, this is the A3 amendment. This would reinstate line 11 on page 2. This would return the language capping the legislature at 120 legislative days without requiring the legislature to adjourn in May. So specifically to this amendment, again, there's just a lot going on in this amendment, and this would just specify the language so that we're very crystal clear as to what we're doing. And I think there's a lot of questions. You know, there's a lot of gray area here. So this amendment then would cap it to that 120 days.
Thank you, Representative Altendorf. Majority Leader Long, to the amendment.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg. Thank you for the amendment, Representative Altendorf. I think that's an important discussion on the number of legislative days. The situation I was thinking about was the pandemic, when we did have the need to meet more often, and it felt like the cap on legislative days would be constraining in an emergency situation like that. So that was the reason we scratched it. Certainly happy to engage in further conversation if this would earn your support.
Representative Purcell?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question, this might be for Mr. Gehring, about what year the 120 legislative days was put, was decided on. It's okay if you don't know that off the top of your head.
We're quizzing you, Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, Representative Purcell, I can look it up quick and let you know.
Okay, we'll hold that thought. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm confused. I thought we were actually able to, during the pandemic, meet. In fact, we did it quite repeatedly, and yes, it was maybe not as easy as just deciding we can meet whenever, but there was a process, we followed it, and I thought the legislature did its duty. So I'm confused as to the 120 days limit didn't seem to prevent us in a pandemic and an emergency of actually doing our job. So I don't understand why, you know, regular, you know, maintaining the 120, unless you want to go full-time legislature is your intent. That's the only intent I can see of keeping the 120. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Majority Leader Long.
Mr. Chair, so we were meeting in special session, and the point I was trying to make was that we were at the whim of the governor to call us back into special session if the legislature determined that we were in an emergency and the governor didn't want us back in session, then 120 legislative days would be providing a limit.
All right. I don't have any other members on the list. I still see Matt Gehring looking through what looks like old historical records. I'm going to guess it's somewhere in the 19th century, Representative Purcell. I was just handed a sheet. I have no idea where it came from, but it says, oh, okay. Oh, nice. GOP researchers. Thank you. It says a 1962 constitutional amendment raised the limit of legislative days from 90 to 120. It replaced the constitutional direction to meet biennially with a more explicit direction, confining regular sessions to each odd-numbered year. So there you go, Representative Purcell. Okay. Any follow-up, Representative Purcell?
Well, thank you for that information. I think when we first became a state and the citizen legislature came only every other year to the Capitol, and it's 2024, and the business before us seems to have gotten, at least in my short time here, it's quite busy, and to make sure that we do our work in that amount of time has seemed challenging thus far. So just an observation.
Right. Representative Altendorf, any final comments? Okay. So the A3 amendment is before us. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Nay.
No.
Okay, the motion does not prevail. All right, we have an A4 amendment. Representative Altendorf, I have that as yours as well.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair. So this one, the A4 amendment, without taking the A3, but I really think that we need to have clarifying language that the voters are going to see on the ballot. So we are adding in this amendment the wording to permit the legislature to meet full time beyond 120 legislative days. And this is, so it's in the description very clearly. We're putting this so the voters understand exactly what they're voting for. This ensures that Minnesotans know what they're getting themselves into, that they are voting to extend the state legislature. And so this is my A4 amendment.
Majority Leader Long to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd ask that members oppose the amendment. There is no requirement in the amendment that there be any particular schedule for the legislature. It's simply removing the time limits on the number of days that we can meet and the mandatory adjournment date. So I think this is intended to essentially be a push poll for voters to give them to try to indicate a particular outcome which is not determined by the amendment.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All right. Representative Altendorf.
Yeah. Thank you. You know, this really is as murky as mud going on right now. So if this is good government, we are not really being honest with the Minnesotans about what is happening in this bill. There's so much in this bill. There's so many different provisions. And what's moving forward is all being added, you know, unfortunately, into one bill that is, I think, very ill-advised. If people really see what's in this bill, this is not, you know, the direction that I believe. I know Representative Purcell said she's been very busy. I don't think this is how government was intended. You know, we do not need to be here as much as we are. My theory is less government is better for the people, more freedom is better for the people, and we are really at a conflicting of interest right now where it seems like there's the majority party that is just adding more and more regulation, more and more government, more and more mandates, And I think a lot of the Minnesotans would really like us to go home and give them a break.
Okay, thank you. The A4 amendment is before us. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, the amendment does not prevail. I have the A5 amendment. Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now we get to discuss what we were discussing earlier. I listened to your testifiers. I took some notes here. Your very first testifier just touched on redistricting. Your second one, by the way, congratulations on becoming an American citizen. Where'd you go?
She had to go home.
Oh, bummer. She briefly mentioned the full-time legislature. Third one, redistricting and lobbying. Fourth one, redistricting, lobbying, and no position on the full-time legislature. So I think this is very confusing to the voters to have this all on one amendment. Yes, there have been in the past multiple, but they all relate to one another. These do not relate to one another at all. They're completely separate. I myself could find myself voting for one or two of these. Definitely not the full-time legislature. I might take a little bit of change to the redistricting commission. But we can't, it's a good governance bill. This is not good governance to have it all split in three. So my amendment simply splits it out into the three amendments, doesn't take any of them off the ballot, doesn't take any of the wording and change it. It just separates them into three, just like we do on the floor with the division. These can easily be divided and easily put on the ballot as separate amendments, and I urge you to accept this amendment.
Majority Leader Long, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment has the same challenge as the last one, which is that it includes the misleading language on lines 1.16 and 1.17. We also have had, as I mentioned, multiple part amendments in the past that are combined into one. I think arts and legacy certainly are tied together in some ways, but they are also separate committees up here in terms of how we view them. So you could certainly argue they're different subjects. We've put those in one question before in the past, and I don't see any reason why these are any less related than the questions we've had on the ballot in the past.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Long, the past is the past, and these are three separate subjects. Opening the door for a full-time legislature, Article 4, Section 12, redistricting here, Independent Redistricting Commission. You're actually adding an article to the Constitution. And then one that I'm actually, thank you, Representative Long, a very a big fan of is legislators must wait a year before they can become a lobbyist. I'll thank you for that one. But this is clearly three different subjects. And please, sir, I would highly encourage you to offer these as three separate amendments, because I can tell you, I love that part of it. But yet, when I go to vote, I'm going to have to vote no on it. Because of the other two things I completely disagree with. I know for a fact there's going to be a lot of Minnesotans in that same position. Or someone's going to like only one, or they're going to like two and not like one. That's not fair to the voter. That's not fair to the people of Minnesota. And we, the people of Minnesota, deserve better than that. So I'm a freshman, so I wasn't here in the past.
Yeah.
This is what we need to do moving forward. I would highly encourage you, and I ask you, please accept this amendment. Let's make these three separate amendments, sir. Thank you, Representative Long. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kwong.
I'm a little bit confused in that it's all the author's way. There's obviously concern about dividing it, and I see no pain or no loss in your bill by allowing three separate amendments. In the past, there used to be bipartisan discussion. And at least listening to, yeah, I can see where maybe we should divide it up and allow people individual choice. But I'm not hearing that. I'm hearing no intent at all to working with the other side of the aisle, working with people to represent a large portion of the state, And I'm disappointed at the determination that, you know, we won't even consider the dividing of the three. You don't like the wording of it? Okay. Then you could have said, you know, I'm hearing you, and I will separate it into three. I don't like the language. I didn't hear that at all. I just heard, no, it should all be one. That's what, well, government is having a conversation and listening to the two sides. And to reject totally an easy suggestion of separate out the three so the people aren't confused, they're not torn between, and they can vote for exactly what they want, giving people a choice. Wow. I thought that was democracy. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, okay. Representative Bliss, closing remarks. On the
Thank end. You, Mr. Chair. You know, it is disappointing to hear the author of the bill saying he's not going to accept this. Some people watching this might assume, because there's broad support for two of the items, that the third one is thrown in there as a catch-all and maybe get passed. I'm not drawing that inference. I'm just saying some people watching this might. I'm very disappointed that the author has asked for a no vote on this, and I would like a voice call. Roll call.
Roll call's been requested.
Not a recall.
Chair Freiberg.
This is for the 8-5 amendment. Freiberg votes no.
Vice Chair Greenman.
No.
Minority Leader Torkelson and Representative Akbaje are excused. Representative Altendorf.
Aye.
Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Bliss.
Aye.
Representative Coulter.
No.
Representative Davis.
Aye.
Representative Frederick?
No.
Representative Purcell?
No.
Representative Quam?
Yes.
Representative Vernick?
No.
There being 4 ayes and 7 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Representative Davis, you have the A6 amendment.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So the A6 amendment moves the vote on the amendment from 2024 to 2026 to allow additional time to have public input, Mr. Chair, on this legislation and have a broader conversation for the public on what we need. We need a bipartisan solution. And I'll just point out, so far, you guys have rejected bipartisanship in elections when it comes to the discussion of having a constitutional amendment put out to the folks. We need bipartisanship on this. And so that's what my amendment would do. I think we need to slow down, have bipartisan support on this, and the A6 amendment is a great opportunity to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Majority Leader Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would urge members to vote no. I believe that the amendment is one that the public would broadly support and can easily and readily understand. There is broad support for good government and for the provisions in the amendment.
Representative Quam.
What is the rush? I mean, there was discussion from the majority, well, the speaker, about having an amendment, but giving it, instead of 2024, having it 2026 on a different amendment before the people, to give the people enough time to analyze. Totally redoing the system, which we've got several election cycles before we'd even get to redistricting. We have to do it in just a few months. Don't give a lot of time for the people. I am wondering what maybe I don't notice in this bill, that we have to do it before people actually notice it. I see nothing wrong with giving to 22, you know, 2 extra years so there can be a real broad discussion and understanding amongst the population, because then you would still have year after year after year past that to implement it. So what is the rush? What are we hiding?
A Representative Davis, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, the 2030 census is a long ways away. Redistricting is a long ways away, Representative Long. And again, please vote yes on this amendment. We need to slow down. We need to have bipartisan support on this decision. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. The A6 amendment is before us. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The amendment does not prevail. Okay, Representative Quam, you have the A7 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in the same spirit of not allowing legislators to go into, you know, trying to bend our arms and lobby us, you know, frankly, if we're going to have an independent group doing this, we need to add that individuals employed by an entity that receives government funds through a direct appropriation by the legislature, in other words, that don't get their livelihood from direct government funding. That is pretty close to the kind of influence. If you're a lobbyist, you're getting your, you know, money directly, your income directly from government activities. And I don't want to put a stumbling stone or temptation amongst these people to, you know, let that influence them. So if we really want a independent, you know, redistricting, we should wholeheartedly say yes. So I ask for a roll call and ask for people to support this improvement to the bill.
Majority Leader Long, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would ask members to vote no. The other provisions in the list in terms of the restrictions on who can serve on the redistricting commission are for elected officials, staff, former elected officials, essentially those who have a direct interest in the outcome of the election because of their personal ties to an official or because they were or are an elected official. This language goes far beyond that, and by my reading could include a school teacher that works for a school that receives state government funding. So I don't believe that this is an appropriate addition to the list.
Okay. Representative Bonner.
Thank you for that. And I just worry that this language is overly broad. So does that mean that if a farmer in Greater Minnesota receives some sort of subsidy for their crops, does that then make the farmer ineligible as well? Does that make a school teacher ineligible? Does that make someone who is working at a food pantry who might receive government grants for funding ineligible? I would argue that all three of those cases are individuals that I would love to see serve in the legislature and would be proud to have as colleagues. And I find this language very problematic and that is so overly broad that this could encompass just about everyone in every walk of life. And it, I find that really discomforting. So I would urge members to vote no.
Representative
Quam. Just to correct the representative, this bill is not defining who is allowed to be in the legislature. You said you'd love to have the people serve in the legislature. This is the people that draw the lines. And an entity that receives direct appropriation, in other words, that's directly to that entity, a general funding for education isn't to a specific entity. And, you know, we can clarify, but isn't the intent to make sure that there is no undue influence to this? So, you know, frankly, I'll withdraw this amendment if the author actually will work with me to come up with a way that we prevent direct appropriations to entities that are, you know, earmarks or singled out and get really precise language, because I get the intent that you don't want this broad, but I hope that there's an intent from the members of this committee that we prevent pay-for-play type activities, and some of those things should be common sense. So if we got restrictions to try and prevent that direct correlating influence, then you know, let's make sure that we are more thorough in that. And so I'll withdraw this in the spirit of working together to make a better bill, and I hope that we can work together.
Thank you. The A7 amendment has been withdrawn. Representative Altendorf, you have the A8 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd like to move the A8 amendment.
Yep.
Okay.
It's before us.
Sorry. Okay. Yep. So this requires a special session of the legislature of the legislation that's passed to consider additional appropriations to the legislature, including member per diem, housing, extra staff pay, salaries, and all those other costs that are going to go along with this.
Majority Leader Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment is unnecessary. The legislature would be able to set their time for a meeting, as I have indicated, and I indicated the many reasons why that's a good idea in terms of the balance of powers and giving the legislature an equal footing with the executive. But there's no need to set up a special session for a process that seems to be presumed by the author of the amendment.
Any discussion? Additional discussion to the amendment? Closing.
No, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I mean, again, we just went through 8 amendments or 7, and it's just awfully disappointing to see such vague responses of clarification. And it just, it seems so murky that all we're trying to do is clarify, you know, for the voters of Minnesotans to get more bipartisan support on this. And it's just, it's very disappointing to see the lack of effort.
Okay. The A8 amendment is before us. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No.
No.
Okay. The amendment is not adopted. That concludes our amendments. Member discussion. Representative Quam, were you on the list for this part earlier? Did you want to go now? I guess you're the de facto lead at this point. would you like to wait until other members have spoken?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't want to say something they would say, because I trust their voices, and so I'll sit back and be illuminated by their discussion.
As we all will. Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, once again, we're here. The governor has stated he wants bipartisan election bills. We've offered several non-controversial. They were just to clear the language up a little bit, to be crystal clear to the Minnesota public and the Minnesota voters what they're voting on this. Even the additional language about extending beyond 120 days, it wasn't saying that we had to meet beyond 120 days. It just says that we could. And again, I think if this is clarified to the residents of Minnesota and the voters, I don't think they would find that too attractive. Again, the other two, you could get me on definitely the lobbying one. I would definitely vote for that one. I'd have to see some modifications to the redistricting commission, but I'm not opposed to it. But I am 100% opposed to a full-time legislature. We are a citizen government. I have a business. I go home. I know my people. I go to the local stores. And Representative Davis mentioned the distance we live from. I live 4 hours and 10 minutes from here. It's not a trivial thing for me to drop what I'm doing at my business. I have no employees. I run a relatively good-sized operation. I would have to find somebody to cover for me. It is seasonal, so this works out good for me. But again, they were very non-controversial. It opened up the, you know, we're trying to get people to trust the system a little bit more, and by just these simple additions to the bill, were not changing the heart and soul of the bill. It was just trying to be more give more clarification to the public. So once again, I'm very disappointed. All Republican input on this is ignored and dropped. We could have worked on the language that you didn't like on my amendment. You said it increased the 120 days. We probably could have maybe worked on that, but no, it was just shot down. So again, I'm disappointed. Once again, the governor requested that we work in a bipartisan manner on election bills, and today we showed that we can't do that. Thank you.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This absolutely does open the door, I'll repeat it again, for us to become a full-time legislature year-round, a Congress of Minnesota. 40 states in our nation are part-time, like we are currently. They got it right. We have it right currently, right now. And again, in the state of Minnesota, we can already call special sessions. You proved that through the pandemic, that we can call special sessions. It's we can do this already. We don't need to open the door for full-time legislation. I'm a pastor. I'm a full-time pastor, Representative Long. And I let people know when they were voting for me, when I was out on the campaign trail, I did not hide that fact. I was actually very open and honest with people about it. And my district, District 6A, welcomed that. They were happy to send me to represent District 6A. And becoming full-time, spending way too much time down here and not in my district where my constituents live, and being a pastor at the church that I've served faithfully at for 5 years, that is definitely going to be a huge disruption. And that's not what the folks of my district want. I think it's real easy for us to, I think it's real easy for politicians, representatives down here in the metro area to again have a one size fits all for all of Minnesota. We live in Greater Minnesota. Greater Minnesota wants its representatives in the district serving them. And to be honest with you, I do treat this as a full-time job, even though it's a part-time job. I treat it as a full-time job. This last spring, summer, and fall, I spent a lot of time in my district going to events, meeting with people, going to their houses, greeting them in the towns and in the townships, even out hunting, I would run into them. This is opening the door to put an end to all that. We do need to slow down. Representative Long, I hope that you would slow down, that you would work in a bipartisan manner. Come now, let us reason together, reach across the aisle, Representative Long, and meet us in the middle, Representative Long. I'll repeat, Representative Long, meet us in the middle, reach across the aisle. Let's reason together on this. Let's bring this as three separate amendments to we the people, with whom all the inherent power of government has been given. Let's bring this to the people in three separate amendments. Thank you, Representative Long. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Davis. Is there any additional member, Representative Altendorf?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Long. Again, there's just such a discrepancy here of the concept of what the legislature does, and it's we're supposed to be serving the people. Truly, we're supposed to be serving the people. We're not supposed to be here full time. That's not what the intent of this was. When I hear even the group Clean Elections, which thank you for your testimony, you know, testify that they were not sure how they stood on this, you know, it should speak volumes that there is too much being put into one bill. So I do have a question for Representative Long, and that is, next door to us, we have the State Office Building expansion growing. That did not come through the state legislature as a vote for us to vote on. It went through a committee. And so I was always very puzzled why we were building such a huge building over there. And so Representative Long, you know, now that we're proposing this, and it looks like we're moving towards or opening up the door towards a full-time state legislature, is that the intent of that building?
I get, thank you, Representative Altendorf. It's a little bit unrelated to the topic before us, but I'll allow a little leeway. Majority Leader Long, do you have any brief response to it?
Sure, Chair Freiberg. The building did get a vote before the body, and it was supported on a bipartisan basis by the Senate Republican leadership at the time and the House Democratic leadership. It had two committee hearings in 2021 in the Rules Committee before it was approved. We are moving forward with the building because the building that we are sitting in right now is deficient, as rated by independent analysts. The roof is leaking. We've had water damage. We've had people injured in the building. It is not ADA accessible. We need a new building, and we need new construction. And the additional space that is being constructed is all public space. It is hearing rooms. It is public meeting space. It is space for the Secretary of State. It is space for the Legislative Reference Library. It is the public functions of government that we are not serving well with the building that we have that is crumbling under our feet.
If we could stick to the elections issues, since this is the elections committee, Representative Altendorf.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess thank you for that leniency, but, you know, it does seem like this is all related. It does seem like it is. I think most voters can see that this is all the intent of the direction of where this is going. You know, I would like to ask another question, if I may, of Representative Long. I think this is an important question. You know, this is my first term, so 2023, now moving into 2024. Sitting on the elections committee, I was told that this was a sacred committee, that the elections were held to be bipartisan, that every other session, that elections have always been bipartisan, that both parties agree on elections, and I believe that has been held sacred until 2023. So my question to you, Representative Long, is your party, the majority party, you have all aspects of the Minnesota government, state government at every level, the governor, the Senate, and the House. What with the elections didn't work out for the Democrat Party?
This is also getting a little bit afield, Representative Altendorf, from the amendment that's before us.
I'm happy to respond.
Sure.
So there seems to be this mythology around bipartisan election work. If I recall, there was an amendment that was put on the ballot entirely by the GOP that would have restricted the access to the ballot based on a photo ID, and that was rejected by the Minnesota voters. This, too, is being put to the voters as a question. And so it will be up to the voters and the people of Minnesota whether or not they want to approve this amendment.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for wrap it up.
I will. Thank you for your leniency. If we're truly putting this for the voters, then we need to make this crystal clear. We need to put this very black and white. And there is too much in this amendment. It's just that I cannot make this any more clear. This is very deceptive to the Minnesota voters. It's wrong. It shouldn't go to, this is bad legislation. Bad government. We're being very lazy at the best and very deceptive at the worst. So the Minnesota voters, I hope, see through this.
Okay. Is there any additional member discussion? Okay, I was unclear if you wanted to talk. So Representative Quam, you can have the last word here.
Well the second to last word, probably. Just clarifying that the author just referenced to the ID requirement, and actually in 08 Crawford v. It was an election board. Justice Stevens wrote the majority opinion by the U.S. Supreme Court, and in that it not only upheld that was a reasonable thing to ensure confidence in voter integrity, every group that was concerned it would disenfranchised saw an increase of voter turnout with the photo ID. So that was part of the basis for that determination. I just wanted to make clear the implication was that it was some crazy idea, and actually it's in line with Supreme Court precedents. But getting back to the discussion, in the testimony, there's discussion about independent commissions in California. There's been a bit of analysis indicating that that independent commission is not quite as independent as the definition ought to be. There was discussion from testifiers about, they brought up trifecta. Actually, do you know when the last two trifectas have been? Directly after the redistricting. 13, 14, 23, 24, those were after the redistricting. And so, that's sort of generated the, and there's only been one party that's had a trifecta since the early 70s when party designation was implemented. I think there's a lot of details, precision, that we're not going to get to cover because this is being rushed. And, the idea of expanding and making it more full-time, my concern about Congress is that they spend too much time away from their communities they're representing. And I love going back and being in with, my neighbors, my communities, being available. I have people walking up to me in the grocery store, youth sports, school activities, community activities, and saying, I'm glad you guys did this. And sometimes, I probably hear more from people that are upset than happy, but that's just the human nature. And they tell me things. But by being in the community, they communicate to me things that they want changed. And that's where I come up with these different amendments, the different bills. It's from the people that I represent. And some of what I say here is because I have constituents saying, please tell them this or talk about this, because I am their voice. And I think the voice is diminished a little bit when I lose that connectivity. And that's part of my resistance to the possibility of opening the door to a more full-time legislature. And that's part of the reason why I want this to be separate questions, so we can get the true sense of the people on each of these components. And I'm very willing to sit down with the author and try and build something that can be bipartisan, because I've done that with some of the members here, and I've had members from the other side of the aisle work with me and make my bills better. But I'm disappointed. Maybe not as surprised as I ought to be, but I'm disappointed, and I can't support this bill that the door's closed to the voice of the people I represent. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Long, any closing remarks?
Brief, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much for the discussion tonight, members. I think that the balance of powers question is not a partisan issue. I've had conversations with several Republican legislators who do see the value of having the legislature have an equal footing with the governor, who often may not be of the same party. And in terms of the the scheduling question. Wisconsin does not have a limit on their days of meeting right now. So they don't have the every three-day requirement, which we are also striking in this bill, and it means that they actually meet for fewer session days than we do, and they meet only 3 days a week in committee. So, Representative Davis, you could have an extra day at home to be with your constituents before coming back up. I was glad to hear the universal support for closing the lobbying revolving door and glad to hear the strong support for nonpartisan redistricting. I wish that we'd had that bipartisan support 6 years ago when we could have taken this action before the last round of redistricting, but better late than never. And I think that Minnesotans strongly support nonpartisan redistricting, strongly want to see their government more accessible, more improved, and fairer. And I look forward to further conversation with members across the aisle and further conversation with community members as well to improve this bill as we move forward.
Thank you, Majority Leader Long. I will renew the motion that House File 4598, as amended, be re-referred to the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
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 Okay.
The motion prevails. Thank you, Majority Leader Long. Your bill is on your way. The second bill on the agenda is House File 4593 from Chair Cleavorn. Welcome to the committee, Chair Cleavorn. While you come down, I will move House File 4593 be re-referred to the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee. So, thank you for your patience, Chair Cleavorn. When you are ready, please describe your bill.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg and Lead Qualm and members of the committee for hearing House File 4593 this evening. From what I'm hearing, tonight's a good night for Minnesota citizens. It sounds like we have a lot of agreement that the voices in Minnesota need to be heard. This legislation before us tonight is over 7 years in the making. We started this journey in 2017 with our 2019 legislation, House File 1605, which I was pleased to author. Many diverse voices, both GOP and DFL, from all regions of our state have been brought into this legislation before us tonight. A few are here with us tonight. We have heard concerns from 2019 in House File 1605, and we incorporated changes. We heard comments in the 2021 redistricting process, and we incorporated changes. I'd like to thank my partners who are here with me tonight for their hard work, and I would especially like to thank Anastasia Belladonna Carrera, who could not be with us this evening. With me tonight to answer technical questions will be Paul Huffman, and I just want to make this really clear. House File 4593 is singularly focused on redistricting and the creation of a Citizens Independent Redistricting Commission, or if the citizens decide, an advisory redistricting commission. The important statement here is citizen, keeping the voices of Minnesotans front and center in the process of democracy and who will be chosen to represent them in government. This is the With Us, For Us redistricting bill. The bill is comprised of three articles. Article 1 is the constitutional amendment. Shall the Minnesota Constitution be amended to establish a Citizens Redistricting Commission that is independent of the legislature to draw legislative and congressional redistricting plans? Article 2 sets out the enabling legislation, from definitions, selection process to the commissioners, ensuring diversity of our state, removal of commissioners, filling vacancies, duties outlined, public hearing requirements, data requirements, and the role of the Legislative Coordinating Commission in the redistricting process. And most importantly, it sets out the principles to guide the redistricting process, including priority of those principles. Article 3 is the Citizens Advisory Redistricting Commission. Should the constitutional amendment not be adopted by the voters, and it sets a similar process for the commission to advise the legislature in the work of redistricting. This is a very high-level overview of the bill, and I would ask you, Mr. Chair, to please recognize Dan Vicuna with Common Cause as my first testifier.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Dan Vicuña, Director of Redistricting and Representation at Common Cause. I'm here today, of course, to testify in support of House File 4593, the With Us, For Us Redistricting Amendment, proposing a historic first in Minnesota, a new approach to drawing the state's voting districts, putting the needs of communities squarely at the center of the process. In Minnesota, as you know, state law currently mandates that the redistricting process happen through normal legislation subject to veto by the governor. The peril, of course, in this process is what we've seen time and time again across the country. Elected officials slicing and dicing communities without regard to their right to fair representation in order to protect incumbents and maximize partisan advantage. In Minnesota, the coincidence of divided government during years ending in zero over the last six decades has resulted in a stalemate in maps drawn by a judicial panel. Unfortunately, the judicial process has very little transparency and provides few guarantees that the public's needs will be prioritized. The most recent census data shows that all of Minnesota's population growth was driven by communities of color. In effect, this saved Minnesota's 8th congressional seat, beating out New York and surprising observers nationwide. Unfortunately, this is no guarantee of a seat at the table for those communities when new districts are drawn. In the last cycle, Common Cause participated in the judicial panel process as co-plaintiffs alongside our statewide partners. We were incredibly proud of the victories our organizing and collective grassroots achieved. The unity maps we submitted, informed by impacted communities, proved that when given the chance, Minnesotans can draw maps that fairly represent everyone. One of the four groups of litigants, the unity maps called the Cordy Plan, drew our maps drew the most opportunity districts for people of color, the most majority minority districts, and had the fewest city splits when drawing districts. We accomplished that while still abiding by all the court's instructions and established precedents on redistricting principles. However, the final maps the judicial panel approved fell short in some respects, and the panel stated explicitly in the opinion accompanying the maps that it believed it was not empowered to make wholesale changes to existing boundaries. In a state with growing communities of color and Native nations that contribute mightily to the state's population growth, economic activity, and cultural vitality, institutional inertia and the status quo simply will not do. House File 4593 provides a better way, which is why supporters sent over 1,000 letters to the Senate Elections Committee and 735 to this committee. It would implement one of the most proven and effective reforms for modernizing democracy, an independent citizens redistricting commission to draw the state's U.S. House and state legislative districts. It would mandate an open and transparent process led by a politically balanced group of Minnesotans who've been screened or under oath and subject to removal to make sure that no political insiders play a role in the drawing of districts. Drawing districts that center and balance the needs of a state's diverse communities requires a body whose members resemble the state, the open-mindedness that comes from not having a personal stake in how districts are drawn, and a lot of listening. The With Us, For Us bill ensures all those things and was co-created with impacted communities, legislative stakeholders from both sides of the aisle and chamber, our members, community stakeholders, and allies. It makes communities of interest a top criterion and requires the newly created commission to travel across Minnesota to learn about these communities in open hearings. This bill creates a redistricting advisory group consisting of the executive directors of the state's ethnic and other nonpartisan councils working with protected groups to ensure that the pool of commission applicants represents the diversity of the state, including geographic diversity. It prohibits partisan and racial gerrymandering and requires maps to be approved with the support of commissioners in the DFL, Republican, and independent/third-party camps. Common Cause is thankful to Representative Cleveland for her leadership in co-creating a vision for an inclusive democracy that stemmed from Minnesotans coming together. We're grateful to our allies for years of work to analyze what will make redistricting work for Minnesotans and proud to support House File 4593 to chart a new path forward for fair representation.
Thank you for your testimony, Dan Vicuña. I have a few people who've signed up to testify. We'll ask testifiers to keep it to about 2 minutes. First on the list is Jovita Morales, and after Jovita Morales will be Mei Yang. Welcome to the committee. Glad to have you here. Thank you for your patience. So please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jovita Morales, and I'm the executive director and founder of the Minnesota Immigrant Movement. We are a grassroots nonprofit that focuses on coming together to build solidarity with and build movements among Latino Minnesotans around issues impacting us. Today, I'm here to support of HF 4593 and to ask that you stand with us in solidarity with and vote yes in our authentic allies for the work we've been doing as a community for those past 5 years. In central, in southern Minnesota, Minnesota immigrant movement organized communities in more than 10 cities like St. Peter, Lisieux Center, Waseca, Glencoe, Mankato, Fairville, Northfield, Bloomington, Shakopee, Burnsville, and Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, and Minneapolis. We met to educate our communities and our families about the importance of voting, understanding how our vote connects directly to individuals and collective political power, and how important it is that we are seeing in this process. There is a false narrative in Minnesota that we as an immigrant are all ineligible to vote. That is fake news. In Minnesota, the far majority of immigrants, Minnesotans, are not only eligible to vote, but we do. We land more than 15 sessions in each city, in 3 sessions in each one of the cities mentioned. Many of us, we have lived in countries where they don't have system of democracy in place. We very much want to be part of a process in creating a healthy, strong, and accessible democracy in Minnesota, where everyone has an equal say and are equitable seen. We came together and we work with Common Cause Minnesota Voices for Racial Justice, ASAIR, COPPY, CLAIR, many other organizations, including the Minnesota Council of Foundations. And just name some of that we work hard to shape that we through will make the process of drawing our district maps fair, where everyone could have a say and participate. We create community of interest maps and came together to talk and negotiate where lines would be drawn and make sure that no one was left behind. We inform our unity maps and make Minnesota history, because together we prove that we could center Minnesotans, including BIPOC Minnesotans, that and still come out with a solid map.
If you could wrap up your testimony.
It is time to fix the problem and leaving our presentation in the minimal underage. I ask you to stand in solidarity with us and vote yes on HF 4595. It is the best bill because it doesn't have just the politician think is good or what people outside Minnesota think is good. HF 4593 has all of that, and it also has what we community think is good for democracy in Minnesota. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Mei Yang, and after Mei Yang will be Osman Ahmed. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good evening, chairs and members of the committee. My name is Mei Yang. I'm the Senior Policy and Partnerships Manager with the Minnesota Council on Foundations. MCF is a statewide association of grantmakers focused on ensuring Minnesota has a strong charitable sector and an inclusive democracy where everyone can thrive. MCF supports House File 4993, which promotes a more inclusive democracy by establishing redistricting processes and principles that maximize community input and participation, allowing for all Minnesotans to have a role in ensuring district lines reflect their community needs and priorities. MCF knows firsthand the power of community-informed redistricting and what independent commissions can produce. During the 2021 redistricting cycle, we partnered with 12 BIPOC-led and serving organizations to form the RMAPS Minnesota Unity Cohort. This group led over 100 hours of training and education, which drew participation from more than 400 community members. Through this engagement, more than 40 community of interest maps were produced. The cohort then used these maps to draw a recommended legislative and congressional map. The outcome was a community-led redistricting plan that kept COIs together, united Minnesota's northern Native communities in one congressional district, and more. Most importantly, the experience proved that an independent redistricting commission not only is possible, but has the power to produce maps that truly reflect Minnesota's communities. Furthermore, this experience showed that not only do historically underrepresented communities desire to be engaged in the redistricting process, but they can in fact lead it. The committee is hearing two bills this evening which aim to improve the redistricting process by creating an independent redistricting commission. MCF is testifying on behalf of House File 4593, as this bill was created by community and directly informed by their participation in the most recent redistricting process. Since 2018, there has been consistent work by many community groups to craft an independent redistricting commission bill, and these efforts have been strengthened after community efforts during the last redistricting cycle. House File 4593 is a community-crafted bill that reflects deep community engagement and honors the wisdom, time, and experience of the community. We urge you to support this standalone redistricting bill. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your testimony. Next testifier is Osman Ahmed. Is Osman Ahmed here?
Okay. It is sundown.
Oh, I apologize. We had some conflicting information about that. So I apologize for that. If Osman Ahmed would like to submit written testimony, we can certainly accept that as well.
Thank you.
Brian Cook is next. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Great. Chair Freiberg and members of the Elections, Finance, and Policy Committee, my name is Brian Cook. I'm the Director of Energy and Elections Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I appreciate the opportunity to share some of our thoughts on Representative Cleburne's House File 4593. The Minnesota Chamber, which represents over 6,300 businesses with over 500,000 employees, supports changes to Minnesota's state election process to allow for greater voter contact and participation. The conduct of legislative elections and sessions are themselves a business issue with real-life, long-lasting impacts on companies of all sizes, their employees, and the communities that they support. Like every Minnesota citizen, businesses are subject to taxes, regulations, and laws. Many business owners believe the process of making laws has been overwhelmed by polarization and political gamesmanship. That's why the chambers had a long-standing position that Minnesota should draw legislative district lines by a commission. Minnesota's current process requires the governor and legislature to pass legislation setting these new boundaries. However, this process has not been successfully completed in over 50 years without intervention by state or federal courts. Minnesota has an opportunity to adopt a more effective system before the 2030 redistricting cycle. We believe that a redistricting commission must be evenly balanced in its partisanship and based on principles that are mutually agreeable and comply with applicable state and federal laws. Minnesota has a long-standing tradition of requiring bipartisan support for significant election law changes, a standard that has promoted stability and helped Minnesotans retain their voice at critical moments. We believe bipartisanship should remain the standard in this sensitive and important policy area, especially when it comes to fundamental changes to the way in which we determine our legislative districts. We expect the mechanics of a redistricting commission to be determined through the collaborative work of majority and minority caucuses in both bodies. We also appreciate Representative Cleburne's approach that a redistricting commission should be contained in a proposed constitutional amendment without other unrelated provisions. This proposal should pass or fail based on its own merits, not those of other issues. We do also have specific concerns, though, about lines 7.25 through 8.2 of the bill. Using statewide proportionality to try to calculate the political leanings of a proposed redistricting plan can lead to backdoor political gerrymandering. Legislators should not be determining who their voters are, and those voters should not be bound by historical voting patterns, especially if there's no recognition of potential voting pattern differences between statewide and legislative races. Thank you for the opportunity to provide our thoughts on House File 4593, and the Chamber looks forward to remaining engaged as this proposal is further developed and considered by the legislature. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify on this bill? Okay, seeing none, we can turn to amendments. Representative Davis, you have the A1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, the A1 amendment just moves the date. If you look at Representative Cleburne, page 9, 9.8, line 8 there, it says, well, it just changes 2024 to 2026. So the A1 amendment, it allows additional time to have public input on the legislation and have a broader conversation on what a bipartisan solution to redistricting, to a redistricting commission would look like. Again, 2030 is a long ways away. I think this is a real common sense amendment to this language, and thank you for the bill.
Chair Cleavorn to the amendment.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg. I would ask for a no vote, and as I stated in my introduction, this work has been started in 2017. A bill was brought in 2019. Changes were incorporated. I did meet with Lead Torkelson earlier to discuss this date change, and until I talked to my partners in this work, I would not be able to accept this amendment, but happy to work with you going forward.
Any additional discussion to the amendment? Closing remarks, Representative Davis.
Just a question. Do you think it's a good idea to allow the voters more time to educate themselves on an amendment they're going to be voting on?
Chair Cleavorn.
I'm not sure that I understand the question, because if we changed, I understand now. Sorry. So you're saying put it on the ballot this year and not implement it until 2026? I just asking for clarification.
Representative Davis.
Submitted to the people in 2026 on the ballot.
I mean, I think the question is just whether, you know, whether this needs an additional 2 years for discussion. I mean, I'm sure there have been many examples of amendments that have gone on to the ballot during the same year that they're legislatively that they're voted on. Is that, I mean, your question, Representative
Davis? Yeah, okay, so, you know, the premise is it's 2024. We want to make sure that it's clear that people will know what they're voting on. And so moving it to 2026, I think, would be a great idea. Give them more time to educate themselves on the amendment.
Yeah. Chair Cleavorn.
Thank you, Representative Davis and Chair Freiberg, for the question. I would say to you, the people are asking for this bill now. This bill has come from the citizens of Minnesota. The conversations with citizens in Minnesota have driven this work. So this is a bill that they created, they know about, and they have had much discussion about. I don't think they will be surprised to see it on the ballot. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, any additional discussion?
Okay, no, Mr. Chair, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Davis. The A1 amendment is before us. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No, the amendment does not prevail. My understanding is the A2 amendment has been withdrawn. That was, okay, correct. Any member discussion to the amendment, to the bill, I should say? Everyone sufficiently discussed the previous one? Okay, Representative Quam.
Again, first of all, I must say, it's nice that it is more of a single focus topic. The author is sounding more open to at least considering and discussing. So those are good things. I would disagree that the vast majority of the communities in greater Minnesota are even aware of this conversation. And my first experience was after the turn of the century for the 2002 cycle is when the Senate came around and had meetings in around the state to talk about the redistricting and then have conversations of input about the redistricting. I thought that was nice because it, if nothing more, the people felt as if they were part of the discussion. And if we're going to change the system, I would love to have part of the new system to where there are regional hearings and public discussions across the state so that everyone on the commission or whatever you want to call it have a chance to hear from the people, the citizens, in the different parts of the state. So they have an understanding maybe in how you draw in northern Minnesota. There are different considerations because of the different communities and et cetera. And there might be boundaries in areas that have commonality that are not obvious to some person that's not familiar with that or hasn't been down there. So I'm not against the general idea. I think there needs to be a broader fleshing out of the topic to make sure that we engage. And we're trying to get people, but there's no guarantee with what the bill says that we're going to have people from all over. Well, the next best thing is to make sure that the people that are part of that group get to go all over and interact with the communities so they can better understand the continuity and the grouping and the redistricting that makes sense to the area so that they have a common voice. Because I want a better system. And if we have a discussion between different ideas, we can maybe globally come together on something that's going to cover it better. So I think I've covered everything, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Cleavorn. You know, I know you and I came into the legislature at the same time, and I remember this being a topic of large concern at that time, almost 6 years ago now. And I know it had predated even you and I, quite candidly. And anecdotally, I know, although this is maybe not a scientific poll, I know we've done numerous polls, I think, on this topic, if I'm not mistaken, at the state fair, which is a fairly representative population of all over the state. I work there a lot. And love it for exactly that reason. But what we've seen is that, generally speaking, whether you poll someone at the state fair or in polls across the state, we see that, generally speaking, Minnesotans have a significantly high degree of agreement that they would like to see an independent redistricting commission, that basic fairness is very important to them, that it ranks high in their priorities in the democratic process. And I know that in those years that I have seen and I have watched you work extensively with groups outside of this legislature on this legislation to try to bring consensus forward, to have conversations, to bring people to the table. And I know that a good number of the provisions in this bill are very similar to the Long Bill. And I suspect that they have informed each other and that that work has transcended in multiple ways, that the voices in this room have been heard in both of those directions. And so I wanted to take a moment to say thank you for all of that work, because I know that it has been a long road and I know that we've gotten here. I would say I don't think we need to wait. I think that the people of Minnesota have been very clear. Before we said we didn't want to do redistricting because it was too close to the census. Now we're saying we don't want to do redistricting because it's too far away from the next census. I think the bottom line is, for a very long time, the people of Minnesota have said loud and clear, they really want to do this. And doing it now gives us additional time to incorporate all of these changes and make sure that they can be applied in a reasonable and effective way. So thank you for the time.
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Cleavorn, for bringing this forward. I think this really is an important conversation that, frankly, I think Minnesotans do want to have. And I would say right now is absolutely the time to have it, when we have come off of a redistricting cycle and folks are aware of to be frank, the chaos of our current process. And I think the other piece that I would like to mention is, you know, it's been mentioned several times how, frankly, lucky we have been to have had divided government at each redistricting cycle, though there was one example recently within the last few decades where a legislatively passed map did become law. I won't get into the history nerd side of that. But I want to point out how close we've come to that not being the case. It was mentioned earlier, the 2010 governor's race, where but for fewer than 4,400 votes the other way, redistricting would have been entirely run by one party. But even more recently than that, 453 votes the other way in one Minnesota Senate race in 2020, and it would have been, redistricting would have been controlled entirely by one party. I don't know about anybody else, but I don't like those odds. I think now is the time to have this conversation and really talk about how this process works. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other additional comments? Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, yeah, good point. You know, it would be nice to get bipartisan support, but unfortunately we have a Democrat trifecta right now. And I know we're going to be sending amendments to the people to vote on, and Republican voices in this committee is being shut out. You still don't have any bipartisan support. Representative Cleavorn, I want to thank you, though, that you're bringing a single subject for an amendment. Thank you for that, ma'am. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any additional comments? Okay. Seeing none, closing remarks. Representative Chair Cleavorn.
Thank you very much, Chair Freiberg. And I would say everyone's invited to join this party. You're welcome. You're welcome to join this bill and to help improve it and make it better. It was informed by both Democratic and Republican voices and independents. And so it's not a one-size-fits-all bill. And I appreciate the comments from Brian Cook. I didn't expect to be sitting at the dais with him at any time when we were on opposite sides of the table. So I welcome you to join me in this work. And thank you, Chair Freiberg, for your time this evening. And I encourage a yes vote.
Thank you. With that, I will renew the motion that House File 4593 be re-referred to the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No. Yeah.
Okay, the motion prevails. House File 4593 is re-referred to the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee. Thank you for your patience, everyone. Spokojni noći, Representative Kwam. And this meeting's adjourned.